Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Eric, she's finally arrived. Mercedes Moné in Boston, impressive crowd. They opened the show with a sort of autobiographical promo for Mercedes. Says she's got unfinished business with Willow, wishes Riho luck before the main event, Riho versus Willow Nightingale, and then comes out and saves Willow from a post-match beatdown after a victory over Riho by a couple of heels, Sky Blue and Julia Hart, and establishes an alliance with Willow, who raises her arm. How do you grade the booking and then the execution of the booking? So the booking idea of how to present Mercedes on her first night in, what she said, how she said it, how she was presented, where her segments were, and then also just the execution of it. Your thoughts, Eric?
A minus. They basically copied the CM Punk playbook from when he debuted in AEW at the United Center on an episode of Rampage on a Friday night, where they never confirmed it, but they hinted at it. I think they hinted at Punk more strongly than they ever did Mercedes Moné. They relied on social media and wrestling websites to let people know, which will get you a certain type of fan, the fan who might not watch every week or pay attention to such things, didn't know. I'd say it has to be considered a success. We'll see what the ratings come in, but they drew 9,400 according to WrestleTix, who I get put out a late email saying he didn't count some sections. So that's more than the 9,000 or so, about the same as Blood and Guts drew, slightly above. The fans treated her like a star. The CEO chant already over, right? Wrestling fans do like chants. We know that, whether you're an AEW or WWE, chant's a big thing. I guess to me, most importantly, she felt like a big star, and unlike some of her time that she spent in New Japan and Stardom last year, she didn't fumble the promo. She did okay at the promo, right? Maybe not ever her strength, not a top-tier talker, but as long as she's solid and she's got somebody writing for her that they brought in from WWE, I'd give them an A minus. Punk would have been an A+, right? This might have been an A or an A- depending on how hard of a grader you are.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I mean, and I think you touched on it. I mean, Mercedes Sasha Banks was not, an A plus promo. That wasn't what she was known for. She's got other traits: her look, her charisma, her confidence, and obviously what she does in the ring. And she's has this resume of big time moments and matches that fans have been on a journey with. And then AEW fans who abandon WWE or still watch it, whatever their situation is, are glad to see her pick up her story. I thought it was smart for her to say, "I'm home." I mean, that's sort of the thing to do these days when you show up somewhere else. Let the hometown or the fans of that promotion feel that you believe this is your home, not somewhere else. And so that is also smart, especially in light of some, little comment she made that Rich and I talked about yesterday.
See, now I thought she was saying Boston is her home.
Oh, I guess that's – well, okay.
From the context of it, I thought that's what it was, but I could be wrong.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe it was meant to be taken two ways, but we can think that possibly. I thought it's a major league presentation. I mean, her outfit, her entrance, the new stage, the new logo, things that everybody gets, the LED board around the ring now, but I mean, AEW's really shined up their product, and being in a major arena like this with a huge, a very big crowd, huge for AEW, and they filmed it well. It just came across as you would hope, which is she is a major star, and she's going to shake things up in a division that just, with all due respect to the others who they acquired, Saraya Page and Toni Storm, it's just, this is next level. And people who are into women's wrestling, like who start with, they go, well, yeah, I'm a fan of wrestling, especially the women. People who go out of their way to say that. AEW has given them somebody now to really look at as the anchor and centerpiece of the division. I don't know. I want to say for the first time, because some people have their favorites. You know, Britt Baker certainly had a run, and you know, there's, you know, a small handful of other people who people have latched onto here and there. But obviously, Mercedes, a huge star. But the key was, and this is it's been a weakness of AEW, is there's sort of been this assumption it's all about the wrestling, it's what happens between the bell to bell, and everybody knows who the stars are. We don't need to insult you by telling you or even go into too much trouble to present them as such. This was Mercedes showing up and going, you got to work hard to come across as a star. And that was not an off-the-rack outfit. She didn't look like she rolled out of bed and was ready for this. This was a major presentation. I think people will be largely pleased with it. I mean, she talked a lot about herself, and I could see some people, you know, wanting her to shift to, you know, what are your professional wrestling goals instead of, like, you know, your biography. When someone at a dinner party says, what do you do for a living? Tell me your background. That's kind of the promo we got. I was fine with it for the first promo, because there are some people who are newer fans with AEW or didn't like WWE and sat out for years. You did that, Eric, for a while. They weren't around for her journey. So, you know, give a little bio. I give it a strong thumbs up. And I like that they had her come out in the main event too, and that they main evented with the women.
I think when you're a star on the level of Mercedes Moné and you're in your hometown, you get to sort of say what you want in your promo, right? Punk got that courtesy extended to him in Chicago in August of 2021. I did notice they did go off the rack on the theme music. Well, they remixed it, but they used public domain music.
Interesting.
Antonin Dvorak's New World Symphony, Symphony No. 9, which was, you know, they remixed it for the modern era. But that was Walter's old theme in NXT UK, I think. So that was just a little wrestling theme trivia for you. Tony Khan, though, spent a lot of money in recent months on Mercedes and Will Ospreay and Kazuchika Okada.
$14 million, according
and,
to Matt.
So he went down market for the Mercedes theme music, even if it's, you know, one of those all time pieces of classical music that everyone it sort of instantly recognizes.
So Eric, what do you now seeing this, experiencing night one in AEW Mercedes? What do you think? You said, you know, it'll show up in the ratings, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. You know, that has to do with how you know. People in AEW are just, like, so frustrated with Tony Khan, thinking that Twitter X is the center of the universe and the center of the wrestling universe, and that's as long as you're getting good feedback there, everything is going great. And there are people who just pull their hair out and have tried to, I mean, multiple people, some wrestlers, some non-wrestlers have told me recently and over the years about that. And so we'll find out, you know, how much of a difference she made. I mean, this was a big show in a big arena with a rare world title defense. They had some other things going for it. And some other good matches on the show. But I think the impact, I mean, I'm not going to over, I mean, I'll react if the viewership goes to, like, you know, 1.2 million. I mean, like, something off the charts that you wouldn't expect. Of course, that's a story. But if it's not that big, if it's, you know, 10, 15% increase, which is good, that doesn't mean that's the ceiling. It also could be the ceiling. Like, it just depends on what they do next. But I think tonight presented her in a way that people who tuned in will tune in again if they are fans of hers, and people who aren't or weren't convinced that she's as big of a deal as other people make her out to be, I think so far so good, and they're going to want to tune in and see this journey. So, next week's a big lineup too, so I think they can actually build on this week's number because now fans know for sure, you know, there'll be more buzz, more word of mouth. I'm not predicting a bigger rating next week because they did put, you know, a special name on this show, and that just sometimes is, you know, people go, okay, this is the one I'm going to watch if I only watch one this month. But I'm not going to be too hung up if the number isn't off the charts this week. I think they can build on it. They just want a higher water level. You know, they're down. I put up a story on pwtorch.com earlier this week on Dynamite ratings and, you know, tracked the first 10 weeks of the year this year versus last year versus 2 years ago. And they're down each year a significant amount. Demos are down too, not as much because it's percentage of available cable homes, and those are going down. That's a little bit of an excuse for viewership going down. But, you know, Raw's NXT is up. You know, NXT viewership is up, and AEW sound. So, you know, it is more of an excuse. I think what they want is a higher water level, and big picture, and I don't know if I want to get into everything else before we, introduce ourselves in pause and stuff like that, because we can do another 10, 20 minutes on this. But it feels like a really fresh product right now, a new start, some really big new names being pushed, some other wrestlers in new roles, such as the Young Bucks, for instance, and Jericho in a different spot now with Hook, and Swerve Strickland still getting a presence and a push. So I just think they're in a position where they should be able to build on things. I thought last week was a step in the right direction, and this week was another one, Eric.
Yeah, I think as far as the TV ratings go, they used to live in the 900 range. Now they're living in the 800 range. Last week, they didn't even hit 800,000 week after a pay-per-view because they didn't advertise very much ahead of time. And so if they're under 800,000 or they don't hit 900,000, then, you know, the Monday morning quarterbacking will take place, and it'll be, well, if you would have announced her ahead of time, people would have tuned in who don't religiously follow AEW or wrestling websites or Twitter. And I'm curious to see, I was in the building for Punk at the United Center, and I believe what the coverage that came out afterward, it likely was the Torch, because you do a good job of getting minute-by-minute ratings on when the occasion is big enough to call for it. I want to say, like, Punk's segment hit a peak of, like, 1.4 million or something on Rampage. It certainly was north of a million, well north of a million, just for his segment on a Friday night. And that was solely as word began to spread, hey, you got to tune in Rampage, Punk is back. So did the same type of thing happen for Sasha Banks, Mercedes Moné, among wrestling fans, right, who may not have been religiously tuned in or even known about it? It'll be curious to see. And if they've had two debuts in 2 weeks, Okada and Moné, and they have not announced either one ahead of time, which if it tells me Tony Khan must have confidence he has a renewal in the bag already, because if he were desperately trying to hotshot things to get that renewal to convince Warner Brothers Discovery that he needed, you know, to goose the ratings a little bit, much like NXT did to get its contract with the CW, right, bringing the big roster stars to pump up the ratings, you do the old pump and dump, he would have announced both of them ahead of time, and he didn't do that. So that
And that goes back to what I said about people pulling their hair out in AEW, because Tony thinks if he hears that people know something's going to happen on Twitter, everybody knows. So I don't even know if Tony would think that announcing it ahead of time would matter, because everybody on his Twitter feed already knows. And that's the world he lives in.
It's weird because since Twitter / X's rebranding as X and change in ownership, I'm just not on Twitter anymore. Like, I used to be on – that's where I lived. I lived on Twitter, right, for professional reasons and personal reasons.
Yeah.
And now I don't. I'm rarely ever on there because I just, there's not a lot there. It's kind of dead. So not what I would use for my bubble or echo chamber these days.
Yeah. Well, you're like a lot of people because traffic's down and the owner is one of the more dangerous flakes out there. But and it's sad because that.
But
was
let the record reflect, he's not. That was not a dig at Tony Khan when he said, "Oh, the owner."
No! The owner of the new owner of Twitter X is a massive flake and a danger to our country and in the future of humanity. And I'm not overstating things with the power that he has. But that's a whole other topic.
Yes, I know. I'm trying to protect you from the pesky aggregators, Wade Keller: Tony Khan.
Nobody would be. I don't know. Maybe people would have thought that. Thank you, Eric. Okay. I want to talk about Okada with you and much more. World title match with Wardlow. So much more to talk about. So let's pause. Let's formally introduce ourselves in the show, and then we'll get to other topics and phone calls. We're anticipating one or two on-site correspondents from Boston tonight. We didn't get confirmation from either of them, but expectations from both of them. Via email, they'd be calling it. So I am expecting that also. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller. I'm the host of the show. I'm the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, which started as a weekly pro wrestling newsletter distributed via post-to-mail starting in the late 1980s. And it still is. It's also available in a digital format for our VIP members on our VIP website, along with paper copy subscriptions. But also we have a website we've been doing for I don't even know how many years, 20, 25 years now, almost. And pwtorch.com. Hope you're checking that out. We got a lot of cool, features, editorials from really talented writers, flashbacks, ratings reports, breaking news, live TV and pay-per-view and PLE coverage. So check it out, pwtorch.com. And also we put out a bunch of podcasts throughout the week. I host many of them and others host many of them, which is good to get other voices and different people with different backgrounds and passions and specialties. And we welcome you to check those shows out by searching Wade Keller on your podcast app of choice and subscribe to the Red Logo Show. This one, our post shows following Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and some collisions. And also the Blue Logo Show, which is includes our flagship, some of our interviews, and some other cool flashbacks and stuff. So check that out. Both of those are free. Search Wade Keller. And search PW Torch to subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. That has a different show each day of the week with different hosts and a different theme, covering different specialty topics such as NXT, to name one. The PW Torch 90s Passcast is cool too, where they jump back, Patrick and Alex jump back 30 years and go through the aforementioned Porcing Torch newsletter, pull out different quotes and tidbits, and just review the news and the backstage news that we reported on and our opinions, and look at it through that 2020 hindsight and discuss it. It's a really fun show. Check out the full lineup. It's free. Search PW Torch. And while you're at it, you'll see a Charco logo show up, PW Torch VIP. Subscribe to that. That has some free VIP shows. It's free samples. That is also your portal. If you want to go VIP using your Apple account, you can upgrade within that podcast feed with just a tap of the side of your phone or whatever model you have and whatever you do to authorize payment. And you can be a VIP member and magically all the locked podcasts unlock. There are other ways to go VIP, including through Patreon, which gives you access on Spotify, which is cool, or through our main website, which is also compatible with Apple Podcasts. Just search PW or go to pwtorch.com/govip for full details on all the different ways to sign up with credit card, Patreon, Apple account, PayPal, and more. I am Wade Keller, and the other voice you hear is Eric Kroll. He is a longtime PW Torch contributor with a long gap in the middle when he was busy with family stuff and career stuff, but he is back, and we talk to him regularly, primarily about AEW. He contributes written pieces. He is a professional journalist by trade most of his adult life, and got his big break and his start with the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter circa 1990. I don't know how you tell the story, Eric, but that's how I tell it. Welcome back to the Coast Chair.
Thank you. Are the plugs over? I thought you were doing an Excalibur homage there for a while when he runs down the card. Yeah.
When I was on the Steve Austin show once, like I did like an 8-minute plug, and he was like, are you done? And I was like, okay. It was a little longer than usual today, but you know what? We probably have some extra people listening.
This is how you make your living, and it's a big business night and a big business week at the Torch with all the new exciting stuff going on in WWE and AEW.
Exactly. And I don't regret having you on, even if you draw undue attention to stuff like that. No, it's great to have you on this week, especially because it is a big week, and I would want to hear your thoughts, whether you're on the show with me or not. So it's great that you are, and welcome.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Our phone number, if you want to join us, and we'd love to hear from you if you're a regular caller, a lapsed caller, or a first-time caller, our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on the switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show to talk AEW Dynamite. You can also email us if that's easier for you. You can do it during and after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision at any time during the show or right afterwards while we're on the air, and we'll check the inbox and maybe get to your email. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Please note it's at Gmail, not at PW Torch anymore. So that's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Okay, let's get to calls. So much more I want to talk to you about, Eric, but I assume callers will touch on some of it. We don't want to leave them on hold too long. And we'll start with longtime listener, caller, and Torch supporter, Mike in Hershey, PA. Mike, welcome. Thanks for kicking off the show. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Thank you, Wade. Thank you, Eric. Good to join you guys tonight. Let's talk about Mercedes Moné, right? I didn't realize, I did not realize I missed her. So much. I don't know. It was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a New Japan person. So like, I didn't watch a minute of her since she left, you know, WWE. I'm somewhat aware of it. Obviously her new look with like the, I don't know how else to describe it, like a like her Puma hairstyle or whatever. I knew she had a new look and everything, but she was great. I was actually excited about watching Dynamite tonight. I tuned in. I am so glad they did it right off the top of the show, because that's one of the things with AEW for me. It's just the patience sometimes of getting through other things, you know, to get to the thing that you want. So they gave it to us right off the top. There was a little bit of continuity. You know, it wrapped it up at the end. And a bunch of great wrestling matches and other stuff that happened during the show, too, tonight. So, I mean, I enjoyed 2 hours of wrestling tonight on a Wednesday. And, you know, the one thing I would say that I noticed off the top, you know, you guys had already mentioned, you know, promos, maybe just talking is not her. I always thought that about her. Loved her wrestling. Love her. You know, you can tell that she's very passionate about wrestling and doing her job and being in that moment and those big moments she talked about that she's been a part of. But, you know, sometimes when she talks, it's not the, I don't know, there's something lost there. And tonight, I mean, meaning, I know it's just not the part of her game that's the most polished, you know, as a performer. But tonight I was watching it. I was into it. I listened to it. And what I loved about it was that I felt like there was like, she was just riding that edge of, is this going to be slightly too long or is it going to become self-indulgent? And then boom, it just seemed like it just ended at the perfect time. I thought it was the perfect length, a great introduction, and I was excited to see her. And the only thing I would say is, I don't know, man, but she seems to be, to borrow a phrase from Roman Reigns' sweatshirt currently, she seems as if she's levels above these other women in AEW at this point, in my opinion. So I would say watch out. That's going to be the biggest thing is finding, you know, comparing her to what else is on the roster right now and seeing if it can excite someone like me to actually want to, you know, I'm excited to see her. I'm not sure who I'm excited to see her wrestle. So that's where I'll start the conversation.
Eric, talk about what awaits Mercedes and anything else you want to respond to that Mike said.
I think you can't teach cool. You can't teach charisma. And Mercedes has, you know, both a surplus of both of those. She instantly elevates the women's division, which probably will get me in trouble in some quarters. But it's for more of AEW's history than not, the women's division has been the liability, kind of the thing that drags the rest of the promotion down, especially on pay-per-views when the women's match is most often the worst match of the show. It's been particularly kind of in the doldrums the last 6 to 9 months because AEW has had a bunch of injuries and people just not on TV. Jamie Hayter, Britt Baker, the very polarizing Toni Storm act that Tony Khan loves and some folks like me do not. And so, you know, if she can just get this, put the women's division on her back and elevate it to good, you know, she will have done something nobody really been able to do in AEW's history. And you've got people coming back from injury. She could have a good match. You know, if you want an easy opponent to break her in at the pay-per-view, you've got Serena Deeb, who can work but lacks charisma. And if you know, Britt Baker, if she comes back, when she comes back, she can, you know, match Mercedes on the mic. Jamie Hayter, if she ever comes back from her injured shoulder, when she comes back, she can work well in the ring. So you've got a bunch of fresh matchups all revolving around Mercedes and returning wrestlers. So for the first time in a long time, I would say, you know, this division is promising.
Yeah. I am hoping that, you know, the term giving a rub to is key. I mean, so many wrestlers became bigger name wrestlers because of who they wrestled at a key moment in that bigger star's career and a big moment in their career that was on the upswing or had this potential. And, you know, I mean, Steve Austin had Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Mike Tyson, Vince McMahon, being surrounded by that diverse motley mix really made a difference. And we can point to a bunch of other more modern ones and older ones where that has happened. And I hope that Mercedes can be that. I mean, first of all, she's not there to put over other people before she retires. Like, she's in her prime. She's got a lot more to offer. But you really want to make sure that her programs are featured and clearly at the top of you know, the priority list for AEW. And I think there's enough people on the roster right now that are intriguing that I think you can fill a couple years worth of feuds with her without having to bring anybody else in. I mean, I do. And she, I think, I was going to say Sasha, but Mercedes is good enough to carry some people who don't have that full well-rounded skill set where there's some clunkiness or some gaps in their, in the flow of their matches. She has that going for her. She's not just a big star who happened to be on TV and big WrestleMania moments. She's also had just killer matches. And so I think it's really promising. I think people are – she has a chance to elevate the division if everything goes as well as people are hoping. But, you know, she's – and there's not – I haven't heard any negatives, you know, but if she has a big head and she's her head is elsewhere and she's got all this money now, so she's, you know, thinking, you know, talk the talk but don't walk the walkers. If that comes through, people will notice. It'll be disappointing. I don't expect that's the case. I think she's got a chip on her shoulder. And I think she's hungry. I think it's genuine. And I think we're going to see a pretty good stretch of matches and feuds and perhaps some improved promos, too, in a new environment. Mike, back to you. Oh, Eric, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, if they need to bring in fresh opponents for whatever reason, today Tony Khan, I think, tweeted out that he met with Stardom, the best women's wrestling promotion, biggest, I guess, anyway.
I have them sticked up, but, you know, teach their own.
Yeah, met with Stardom president Taro Okada, not to be confused with the wrestler Okada, ahead of, you know, that the Stardom president was in Boston, I guess, they were talking. Rossi Stardom, the biggest Japanese women's promotion, is about to undergo some changes because Rossi Ogawa, the booker and founder who sold to Bushiroad, his company about 5 years ago, has left and is going to be taking some of the wrestlers with him, but still probably going to be plenty of talent left over from Stardom to work really good matches. I mean, it is the best women's wrestling I see. It makes watching American women's wrestling harder for me when I started Stardom subscription. But, you know, obviously there are culture language barriers to that kind of thing. But Tony Khan's calling card has been, we're just going to put out some good matches, and sometimes they're going to have great stories, and other times they won't have as much story. So, you know, you could be getting some CML-style dream matches with some of the Stardom women's wrestlers.
Yeah, and hey, I mean, if they can strengthen it, I'm not against it, but I don't think they have to in order to get by. Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I think the return I'm looking most forward to is going to be Britt Baker. I want to see how she – I feel like Britt has been gone long enough that when she comes back, it could be a very big deal. That could be – that's probably the freshest matchup that I can see that's – in my opinion, that's AEW's biggest female star, at least she has been. Presentation-wise, look, as far as in the ring, I never had a problem, you know, with Britt Baker. I feel like she's entertaining. I thought she had some good matches, some really great moments in the company. So I would look forward to that being, you know, whatever happens in between now and then, that's what I'm actually looking forward to, you know, down the line. So, yeah, that's a... That's basically my take on the evening with Mercedes. And I just had one other thing. I just wanted to turn to Okada, the developments with Okada. I'm just not really sure how to feel about Okada. As I mentioned before, I'm not a New Japan. I'm New Japan aware, but I'm not New Japan. This guy is brand new to me. You know, I mean, he's like, I'm Googling, trying to figure out, you know, things about him. How tall is this guy? You know, like, how old is he? I don't know these things. Like, he's brand new to me. And, you know, last week, the introduction of him, I'm expecting, you know, that this guy's a big star, and I'm kind of like, you know, I'm getting it. But, you know, the treatment was slightly different than, you know, like what Mercedes Moné got tonight. And now they're kind of, you know, they're taking this megastar, and kind of slow tracking him, I guess, through this, these 6-man tags. I felt a little bit optimistic tonight. I thought that was cool. I mean, I didn't know the guy could even speak English. I thought that was kind of a funny moment back there with the interviewer. I forget his name. He's not on very often.
Alex Marvez.
Thank you. Yeah. you know,
he was,
and
he
wrestling,
was a fellow wrestling newsletter publisher back in the late 80s, around the time Eric was first writing for the tour. Yeah.
We don't going back then. So, it was interesting. But my I would say that I'm optimistic. I do feel, I don't know, for some reason, I feel that this guy is a very big star, that I'm waiting to see it. And the question for me is ultimately, would I have enjoyed this better? Would this have been a guy who maybe would have been, could have been, we'll never know, you know, in WWE. And then I don't want to take it in that direction too far, but that's my question with Okada. I almost get the feeling like, man, they could have probably done a better job with, I feel maybe it would have been maybe less comfortable for him, better for us. And that's all I have, guys. Appreciate the time. Have a great night.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, people like Mike are who I have in mind, Eric, when I watch Okada in AEW, because you're going to love seeing Okada in AEW. You have your opinion on how they use him, and that's fine, but you see him as a star. But Okada, if they didn't treat him like a star, and he just showed up and started wrestling on Rampage, like, people like Mike wouldn't think twice about him until X, Y, and Z happens, you know, and he'd show his talent. That has, you know, been part of defining a generation of great major matches. But has AEW done enough? And given that Okada isn't flashy like Ospreay, for instance, right out of the gate, and we can pick other, you know, acquisitions from AEW and other flashy stars, and he doesn't have the WWE background, are they doing enough? And do you like the framing of Okada and how he's being presented to win people over, like Mike, who are hearing and sensing that there's a core group of fans, the foundation of AEW's fan base, that knows him and loves him and respects him and is excited about him. And the announcers are telling you he's a big star. But are they showing people like Mike enough of that yet? Or if not, it doesn't matter because he will eventually. Like, talk on that.
So first of all, Okada has only been on two Dynamites and one Collision. So why don't we pump the brakes on how they're defining him, right? He came out, big surprise. Should they have advertised him ahead of time? I don't know I don't know if you don't know who Okada is. If you know who Okada is, you probably tuning into Dynamite already anyway. If you don't know who he is, I'm not sure he's a household American. He's definitely not a household American name yet. To where that would necessarily pop a rating. Probably would have done better than 779,000 total viewers, but so he needs a mouthpiece, right? So he, you know,
he
does. He doesn't speak English as his first language, and I think you might have seen
tonight.
He spoke a sentence, right?
Well,
one or two. So. I think it would be a stretch to ask him to do a taped promo in English. And so you know, pairing him with the Bucks, who are being cocky heel a-holes, makes a lot of sense. The Bucks also, they're personal friends. He has a comfort level with them moving to a new country. As for taking it too slow with him, and he's already going after Eddie Kingston's title next week, which the Continental Crown, which I thought was way too fast. I thought they were going to build this match up for the pay-per-view, but I guess they must have something else in mind, or maybe they go to a draw or don't get a conclusive finish, which they can't really do because you need to put Okada over if he's going to be a top-line heel. And at the salary they're paying him, he's probably got to be a top-line heel, especially with Ospreay getting over so well as a babyface. Mm-hmm. As for Mike's point about he would have rather seen him in WWE, well, they have a history of treating Japanese wrestlers like children and exotic individuals who spray mist. So I don't know that they would have done that to Okada, especially that Vince McMahon is no longer there, but I don't know that they wouldn't have done it as well. So
I'm confident in saying that Paul Levesque would not have gone down the path of Vince McMahon, but Tozawa is not a encouraging example, but he is a prelim wrestler, comedy figure, not a main event guy, and he's, you know, sort of the vestiges of that inertia of a different era that Vince McMahon, you know, perpetuated beyond its freshness date. But I Levesque would have known better. If they spent money on it, they would have done something very, very respectful with him. I am confident. I might have been told that. How much is it? Do you think it hurts Okada that he shows up at the same time as Will Ospreay and Mercedes Moné? Like, because we had it with Adam Cole, Brian Danielson, CM Punk. Like, it's like just bang, bang, bang. Is there a chance he gets lost in the mix? Or you've got a new top babyface in the women's division. You have a new top babyface in the men's division who's super flashy and can just talk his way and wrestle his way into impressing people. And Okada's on a different path. And because all three are such different in different places and different characters with different strengths and different ways you present them, is it just fine? In fact, it's even better. And this is kind of my leaning because AEW feels like this exciting, freshened product where, you know, there was the MJF era, and MJF's super talented and he'll probably have a great, great career and make millions of dollars. But I don't think people are sitting around going, man, AEW really misses MJF right now. I think people are pretty happy with all this new stuff going on and, you know, eventually perhaps MJF will return and be in the mix and elevate things even more. So anyway, I asked the question, revised it, answered it, and then added a layer to it. Eric, take it away.
Who is this MJF you're talking about? Oh yeah, right. He was the guy who took the company into the toilet. If maybe not in business, certainly in a creative direction. Since about after March after Revolution, when he had that amazing 60-plus minute match with Brian Danielson, that he took it into Comedyville. Oh yeah, it seems like it was a year ago that MJF was the world champion and there was the goofy devil stuff and all the other nonsense, but it was only December 30th that he lost the title. So it's not even 3 months yet. I think Tony, to answer your question, I think Tony Khan was going with the sort of force multiplier effect that you referenced, put so much new star power and refreshed the show in such a major way, a new set, new production techniques when you have enough fans to allow your camera people to do wide shots of the arena. And Tony Khan himself has made reference to that he wants this to be a hot period like fall of 2021 when Punk Danielson and Adam Cole, baby, came in to AEW. Would Okada coming in on his own 3 months ago or 3 months from now maybe been, you know, made a bigger splash, put a bigger solo spot like on Okada? Yes, but then you wouldn't get that effect of, hey, if you sampled, which I think they're going for is, hey, if you've loved what you've loved about AEW, except for that 6 month period with MJF, you know, keep watching because we're giving you all these great things to our hardcore fans. And if you, you know, fallen off with AEW, hey, we've got, you know, Moné, who you know and love, and Okada, who you may have heard about but don't know, but he's going to be great, and Will Ospreay, who is just completely over as the top babyface within, a few weeks of appearances.
All right, very good. Let's keep rolling through calls. We'll go to Greg in Waterloo, Iowa next. Greg, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Yeah, I got a few things on my mind, and I want to get to the, you know, the big business talk. But I will say on the Ospreay matter, when I saw the rating last week, I was kind of critical of the presentation of, like, the match, putting him in the match with Kyle Fletcher. And my thought was a good percentage of the AEW fans, even though don't, like, follow, like, Ring of Honor really closely or don't pay super close attention, probably weren't too overly familiar with Kyle Fletcher, was my guess. And, you know, Ospreay being unestablished in front of, like, an American television audience, I was critical of that. But then I got to say tonight, like, his promo was absolutely on fire, and this is the way to present the guy. Like, he's going to be bringing this all the time, and you're because I was also initially critical of the announcement of the Danielson match because it felt like it was part of, like, this whole thing of, like, you know, having great matches with people just for the sake of having great matches, and that's all you needed to do. But I was glad to see him, like, do this really, really fiery, passionate promo, and he came off like a superstar. And so I was I left room to amend my thoughts after seeing that rating for, like, the quarter hour for the match with Kyle Fletcher. But, man, if this is what he's bringing to the table, like, I'm a lot more optimistic about how he's going to be presented. I thought he was on fire tonight.
Yeah, well, let's pause. Eric, what have you thought of Ospreay's presentation so far? AEW's part of how they frame him and then how he's been coming across.
I expected he would get over mostly through his in-ring work, and didn't really know what he was going to bring to the mic, because he spent most of his, the highest profile part of his career has been spent in Japan, and New Japan does not have weekly television shows that where there's pressure to get ratings in the same, as your primary revenue source, as the same way as American promotions have. But he's just sort of, there's something about happy to be there, right? Happy to be at work. I saw it with Okada too. Okada looks so happy to be refreshed and playing a heel again and not playing out the string like he did during his last year in New Japan. And the same thing, Will Ospreay got a big contract, and you could do two things when you get a big contract in sports and entertainment. You can go phone it in, or you could, have a chip on your shoulder and want to prove that you are worth the money. And Ospreay has done that so far. Elevated is such a babyface theme, and I'm surprised that he's not been in AEW very long, and the fans already know the part of the song where they're supposed to chant, Ospreay, Ospreay,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Bruv is sort of the cousin to Bro from
yeah.
Matt Riddle.
Yep.
Say what you will about Matt Riddle, but if the guy didn't have his personal demons, I thought he was the next top star for WWE, or had the potential to be, right, but just mm-hmm. couldn't rely on the guy, obviously, but just tons of charisma and a good worker and a good look.
A bit of a flake,
again,
one might say.
Yeah, yeah, plus all of the other stuff
yeah.
goes beyond flake.
Well, they were, I think they were willing to push past that, so
I
mean,
I guess,
them being
I guess
a flake is what did him in.
Is the company. Yeah, and so Bruv already over. The fans and their chants. So CEO and Bruv, you'd be hearing a lot of that. I didn't have a problem with putting Ospreay had a great match at the pay-per-view against Takeshita that was basically, they didn't have time to build a story. They're in the same stable. So the story was just a simple, hey, two really good guys having a good match, right? Literally, that's what they told you the story was. And then they followed that up with the free version of that on TV, Ospreay and Fletcher. I'm not sure what AEW can do to break its ratings pattern. It's almost set in stone at this point, I think. The last three quarters, from 9:15 Eastern on to 10 in the overrun, it tends to go down, almost no matter what they put there. You would have to, you would have to put the debut of Mercedes Moné, in this show, and teasing the whole show probably to get people to stick around. It would have to be.
And you still
out.
Have a smaller audience than at the top of the show, even if you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not every it's a lot of wrestling shows. Raw has the same ratings patterns. Yeah. I don't know that SmackDown does, especially not when you have The Rock in the main event segment.
But I'll also interject this. I know from interactions with Tony Khan and people who talk about what Tony Khan focuses on, a lot of times it's small ball. Like, what is the quarter hour for this segment that I really had a lot of hopes would do well? Or how can we retain 12% more of the audience during a commercial break when we go to the double box, picture-in-picture situation? And it's like, that's small ball. Like, what's major league is, we have big stars, and we're going to present them as big stars, and we're going to be more than competent in our booking. And to me, that like making your wrestlers seem like stars and consistently pushing them and framing them in the best light and having their matches feel important, whether it's for a title or not, everything else falls into place. Like, I'm not particularly worried about like, oh, they could have had an extra 150,000 people watching in quarter eight if they had done X, Y, or Z. Now, it's not a bad thing. I mean, like, I think it's worthy of a discussion, but it's sort of small ball. Like, it's not – that doesn't change your trajectory because you had a lower – you could have done a better quarter hour in eight if you had hyped something instead of putting it in quarter hour number one. And I'm not being critical of you bringing it up. I just want to kind of put out there, let's not get bogged down in that. Like, because I know one of the – criticisms or critiques of Tony internally is he just pours over the numbers in more detail than he ought to, while not paying attention to bigger issues that are going on that would actually lead to that upward trajectory of bringing in more fans and having a bigger base to sell tickets to and pay-per-views to. That's just a sidebar because we, you know, people talk about that a lot, and it's worth bringing up, but it's not the be all end all. And I like putting her at the top of the show. And I also, by the way, will defend surprise, unannounced surprises or hints, because you're not gonna, it's not gonna make or break whether people become AEW fans based on whether they tune in the first week they appear or the second week they appear. But you can have a big drop off after the first week if you don't have a good presentation of the act, even if you advertise them ahead of time. So to me, it's like just feature them well, and you know, you build it, they will come. And I think they're in a spot where they're doing that right now. I mean, the video packages are slicker, the camera angles, the production, the new logo, the new LED board. I mean, everything just looks cleaner and more modern. AEW started looking pretty drab. Compared to WWE, you know, who set the standard, but even compared to some features in the energy in the building at NXT, even though it's a studio setting and Impact in the studio setting, there were things in AEW that just felt drab, in part because they were going to these arenas that were so darkly lit. So to me, this felt like a real spark of an episode.
The arenas are darkly lit because there's only 2,000 or 3,000 people in there, right?
I know,
trying
yeah.
to cover up the empty sheets. I'm sure the arena has fine lighting. It's they can't use
absolutely. Yeah, no, that's baked into my comment. They have to dim the lights, and it's drab. And the key is, if you're selling – if you have people who – you need to know who's going to be on Dynamite when tickets go on sale or when you're counted on to be a late walk-up. And so, you know, you have about 1 week for the walk-up audience and you got a few months out to sell tickets ahead of time at ticket launch. Idea is you want to have your top people on almost every Dynamite. And obviously, you know, Brian Keith and Kyle O'Reilly tune into Collision. I mean, that's clearly the B show right now. They're putting all their effort into Dynamite with all the things they're announcing for Dynamite. And that's good. They need to get that working before they start splitting things. But they need to have big stars who people want to pay to see. They'll fill the buildings, they can light up the buildings, and they'll be in better shape. They're not always going to be in a cool setting like, you know, a big city in a great building like TD Garden to really see Major League. But every once in a while, you want to remind people, we are Major League, and tonight they did that. Back to Greg.
Good points. And I guess now to get into the the big business portion of the program, which I've been calling in for the last several weeks, talking about expectations for it and all that. And I'll say, I guess, as a fan of Mercedes, I thought that the debut presentation went about as well as you could possibly expect it to. I mean, it was she came off looking like a superstar. I agree. I also agree that there is a difference between her and some of the other talent right now. And that's partially because, you know, she has that factor about her that just like makes her stand out. But also it's also with like what has and has not been invested in, I think, by the company. And I'm with Eric on the rest of the division. And my critique of Toni Storm has been that the character has not translated to in-ring work, and I think that plays a role maybe in fans feeling a certain way about elements of the division. But as for a debut, I thought this was very, very, very well done as a fan of hers. And there was also a group of her really big fans traveled to the arena. Like there were people who traveled in to be at the show, and they were carrying her signs and stuff. But I'm sure the excitement of those people probably might have come off like reflected or, you know, rubbed off on the rest of the crowd a bit. So, I mean, this was perfect, but I also realized that this is just one night and that feeling's not going to last forever. And I'm also, you know, objective enough to realize, you know, this is a person who there might be a bit of a, you know, there may be a bit of a risk with as far as, you know, maybe how she perceives herself and things that have happened in the past. And but for one night, this was really good. And I think that this is going to be now we're going to see really like Toni, because like the mission statement was there. Like she says something like, this is the only company that can take. And I know that's just her being like, you know, promoting, I think, the company that she's a part of now, because I know that she doesn't. I know she knows the power that WWE has, but as far as like taking women's wrestling globally and all, that's a big statement. And like now the commitment has got to be there. And this is 1 week and we'll see where it goes from here. But man, you have to be optimistic, but there's still a lot left to do.
Yeah, this is week one, and that's why I said at the top of the show. I think you hope for a bigger rating, but if you don't get it, it's it's disappointing, but it shows you got some work to do. But the pieces are in place. If you do things, you know, quote unquote, right, and you're steady for 3, 4, 5 months, I think there'll be a difference. You know, I mean, yeah, they're going to be above 800,000 this week, and they likely will be above 900,000. They haven't been above 900,000 since they drew 901,000 back on October 17th. So even that'll be enough. But, you know, do rumors and innuendo and speculation on Twitter X, is that enough to have a you know, 20% increase in viewership over average? Probably not. But people are going to find out she was there, and if the buzz is good, and I think it will be, you just keep putting on good shows, and you add two or three other fresh stars, and then better frame the current people who have been around and subtract a few people who maybe are taking up space, and you start to run bigger crowds. You've got a new logo, fresh look. I think you can build on this. So I just – this feels like a product that can be built upon, and they can get back to a higher water level. But it doesn't have to be just all this week. You know, that rush, that sugar rush of a good rating would be nice, but there's still work to do.
Yeah, I think often you have a good wrestling show and then there's buzz about it. You don't – the rating doesn't always translate that week, but then the next week you get a big bump that for a show that might seem like nothing, although next week's Toronto show is loaded as well.
Yeah, which I'm glad. It's a major city. They're loading it. They're showing they've got talent depth to put on two good shows in a row without a lot of redundancies. I mean, Jericho and Hook aren't going to be in the same ring again, but very different circumstances. But yeah, you have Christian and Copeland as a big match, and then Mercedes again, Eric. I mean, they're advertising her for next week. That's important. You don't want people to think, oh, she's probably going to disappear for 2 or 3 weeks.
It's weird because I think they booked the Coca-Cola Coliseum, which is like the minor league hockey arena in downtown Toronto that I've passed numerous times on the main highway there in the downtown, as opposed to where the Maple Leafs play, the big arena. And I don't think they've hit 5,000 tickets sold, according to WrestleTix, yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll be able to see, is there a last-minute surge of ticket sales for Canadian fans who want to go see the former Sasha Banks? They did leave, you know, I know they did leave some money on the table tonight by not blatantly advertising her and marketing her ahead of time. Even if they end up with 9,400 tickets distributed, as WrestleTix is saying, according to sources, TD Garden is an NBA arena where the Celtics play, and its capacity is close to 20,000 for basketball. You would probably lop off a third of that for wrestling because of the giant stage. So, you know, it's possible they could have sold, you know, if they opened up the whole building, 13,000 seats tonight. And so you got 9,400. Would they have sold the place out had they announced her?
And WrestleTix said in their note that they think there were a bunch of comps and lower price tickets than usual to get that many people in the venue because, you know, they want the optics of her being a big deal and they want her to be impressed. They want Okada to be impressed, who had to suffer through a small – I mean, he's been in front of small crowds in Japan too, but, you know, he comes to the United States and his first match as a full-time wrestler in AEW is in front of, you know, roughly 2,000 people on a Thursday night. You know, I mean, you want to impress the person who comes in from out of town, who's a big deal. You know, you vacuum and you shine up the windows and you make your house look nice for a guest. And Okada's this like guest. You want to make him, you want to give the impression it's not just about the money. He's also can be featured as a big star. And tonight, you know, let him know, you know, sometimes it'll be big crowds, sometimes smaller crowds. Next week will be a drop off. And they could have booked the bigger arena, maybe, unless there's a concert there. The Maple Leafs aren't playing there next Wednesday, but you know, it's going to be hard to make Coca-Cola Arena look as cool as tonight because it is just a hockey arena with, you know, only a lower bowl, so to speak. But, you know, with the staging and lighting and stuff, at least you won't have to darken upper deck. You can pack the place if they do their job. It holds, I think, around, I don't know, close to 8,000 people. So they with the staging and stuff, it actually should be a full house.
A couple other Sasha Mercedes points. My recollection is that she was a proven ratings draw when she was on SmackDown, right? Like she popped some quarter hours, has her fan base. I know this is a, you know, real small sample size, but when they announced her for a New Japan show January of 2023, I think, the ticket sales were moving kind of slow in San Jose, and then it was an instant sellout, right? She moved 1,000 tickets or more just based on her being announced for the show. So she has a small, you know, she has somewhat of a history of being a draw. As for her big head or ego or being difficult to deal with, let me just give Tony Khan some advice. Don't create women's tag team titles and then have Sasha win with a partner and then abruptly try and take them off her because she may walk out of the building. There's a bit of a history of that.
Yes. Be cognizant of the fact that she expects to be treated like a star. She carries herself like a star. You're paying her like a top star. So, you know, treat her that way. WWE wasn't in the, you know, at that moment in the Sasha Banks business, and their belief is you can lose at a certain time, and it doesn't matter because we'll build you up again with our machine. And, you know, everybody kind of goes through that. And, you know, obviously she had her perspective on it, and there were some mixed opinions within WWE on how she handled that. But in AEW, I think it's less of a problem because they're not in the business in the women's division of pushing anyone else. The problem is going to be Britt Baker. Like, how does she handle this? But she's been sidelined for so long. I mean, you know, it's not like Sasha's displacing her. And really, if you're smart, whoever you are, Britt Baker or Toni Storm or whoever, you're glad somebody's there to help elevate the division.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. And I'll just finish up here and let you guys go here a moment. But my last point is that just thinking more on like the bigger general picture. And I'm glad, Wade, that you said that, because sometimes I myself get caught up like in, you know, the minutia of quarter hour ratings, all that, and picking it apart. And you're absolutely right about, you know, beginning to lay the groundwork for something. And maybe it should be looked like that, like instead of just like, you know, hitting the panic button and saying like, or Eric, what you said about Okada, like instead of just like looking at the immediate presentation, well, let's see where we are 2 to 3 months of like building this up. And so, you know, I'm glad that you said that, because I do tend to get like caught up in like the minutia of that. I think that might be part of that, might be a ripple effect, because other people do too. So it's just, my final point on the Mercedes factor is that going back, and I've mentioned this in our previous calls, and it's still rings true now, is that part of being treated like a star, you know, Mercedes is somebody who has a very, very high opinion of her ability in the ring, as far as like, if you followed her career and interviews she's done, you know, she has a very high opinion of what she's believes she's capable of doing in the ring, and she's going to want to be like presented in terms of like being able to have matches like the top guys. And that is one area that's still like another area, in addition to like the overall presentation of the division, is like, you know, giving the women's division, maybe bringing in Stardom women will help, but like of that next step is also like, you know, on TV and on pay-per-views on a regular basis, like giving your talented performers like the opportunity to have like the same kind of matches that the top guys have. And with that, I will go, and that will be an interesting trend to watch as time goes on here. And thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it. Greg, anything you want to, Eric, anything you want to comment on there?
Only that Greg is from Waterloo, Iowa, where the Wrestling Hall of Fame is. And do you know who on this call is a member of the Wrestling Hall of Fame? Writer's Wing? Wade Kelly?
I believe I am, because I don't believe you are, Eric.
No, I was putting you over there, buddy.
No, I know. I appreciate it. Waterloo's fun. I've enjoyed my time in that city.
Would you say it's fair to say you couldn't escape if you wanted to?
What? What's that a reference to?
It's an ABBA lyric. Their big hit song, Waterloo.
Couldn't escape
if I wanted to. I guess you didn't see that Pierce Brosnan Big Fat Greek Wedding movie. I think that's what it was called.
I don't think I saw that. I mean, I've listened to ABBA songs, and I'm not going to admit to singing along, no matter what people might have seen or heard. I didn't get the reference. But
all right,
that's cool.
You swing for the fences. Sometimes you strike out. It happens.
It's not always. Yeah, it's a fun old downtown. And when you stray from the downtown, it turns into just another, you know, city with all the chain places. But the downtown's cool. There's some history.
I did not see Wade's burial of Waterloo, Iowa, coming. I got to be honest with you. Wasn't my intention to bury.
I'm not burying it. I'm putting over the downtown. I love old downtowns. I love old buildings. I love old architecture. So that had that. I liked it. And it's good, you know, if you want to go to a Noodles and Company, it's there, you know, they got the chain. So that's good too, but it's not the reason to go there. It's the downtown and the river. And anyway, all right, let's go to our onsite correspondent. Larry and Doug, you guys are up next after onsite correspondent. So hold on if you can. But we're going to go to Taylor, who attended tonight's event at TD Garden Arena. Taylor, welcome. Thanks for calling up.
Hey, Wade, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. Yeah. It's a fun time to be doing a post show on AEW. So give us your top takeaway from tonight, and then we'll badger you with specific questions.
Yeah, it was I mean, the show was electric. It reminded me of like the early days of going to AEW shows. I mean, if you had told me 6 months ago I was going to be at a show with Mercedes Moné, Jay White, Will Ospreay, and Okada, I would have told you you were crazy. I mean, I used to watch those guys. I used to like search those guys' matches on YouTube. So to be able to be in the same arena and watch those guys was pretty special tonight. And I, you know, I think one of the callers said earlier that it was just nice to see like Mercedes back. And I kind of felt like that too. I watched her debut in New Japan and watched like the first match, but kind of didn't follow what she was doing there. And I just feel like she's someone who needs to be on weekly TV. It's like, it was cool she did her New Japan thing and you know, was able to go do that, but it's definitely nice to have her back.
So talk about the crowd reaction for her in that building compared to other top babyface crowd reactions tonight and other live events you've attended over time.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely had, you know, one of the biggest reactions. I've been to every AEW show since they've been, you know, coming to Boston. This is probably maybe show 6 or 7. She definitely had one of the, you know, I would say her reaction was up there with, you know, some of the biggest ones with, you know, when Punk came back and, you know, when Kenny first came. I know I would say her and Ospreay had the biggest reactions tonight. Placement wild for Ospreay too. But yeah, she had a, you know, it didn't hurt that her new music has that CEO chant, which was easy to get the crowd going. But it was a great crowd. I was there for Blood and Guts back in July, and this was a way better show, and I felt that, like, the crowd was definitely like more engaged and more into it.
Hey, how much that CEO song? On TV, it sounded just so loud. How much of that is the theme songs when they're saying CEO is very loud, and how much of it was the crowd being loud?
It was the crowd being loud. I mean, the CEO chant is loud, but like the crowd was really, and then once you kind of caught on to the song and the crowd could kind of feel when that CEO part was coming, then it like the crowd really ramped up for like that CEO chant.
Cool. The enthusiasm in the crowd for Ospreay was good. My only critique of Ospreay is I just don't know if we can handle that much enthusiasm every week from him. So I'm curious when it does dial down into something a little bit less exciting than a dream match against Danielson in my first in-ring long-form promo since signing full-time with AEW, how he's going to do. But talk about the vibe in the building for him and your personal impression of him as a star in this new environment for him being – and we talked about, you know, the Bucks and Kenny needing to adjust to it, but Cody didn't, being not just someone who gets really good high star ratings every few months in a big match, but you got to be a part of a weekly soap opera. You got to be a character. You got to have fresh things to say. You've got to have chapters to your stories. Ospreay seems like he's got some tools to and enthusiasm to do that. Although, again, tonight is just talking about a dream match for him that also, thankfully, is a dream match for the fans, the customers. But do you watch him from afar, I don't know where you sat, and think, oh yeah, this guy has a presence, he's a star?
Yeah, I mean, it was cool just to see how like excited he was to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, being from Boston, and we have, you know, he reminds me of, like, my crazy buddy from when I was like growing up, who was just like,
right.
so pumped to go out for a night of drinking. So I don't know, I just feel like I love him. I think he's awesome. I mean, I know right now that like his speed right now is like, I'm going to put the gas pedal to the ground. I just hope that they kind of slow him down a little bit because he's going to be like really special for them. And he just reminds me of like one of my buddies that I like go out and have beers with and watch a game. It was just really fun to like see how pumped he was to be there. But I just hope that they kind of make sure that he's, you know, instead of the gas pedal being down 100%, maybe just put it down 90%. You know, just keep him healthy and keep him going.
Yeah. So, was there anything after the Willow Riho match?
Yeah. So, like when it went off air, you know, they kept the music going, and Mercedes was just kind of like putting her hands up to the crowd, like saying thank you. I think she had a bunch of family that was there, so she was, you know, giving a lot of hugs to a lot of people around ringside, taking a lot of pitches.
Yeah.
But the crowd was chanting and singing like just as loud as when we were on air as they were like off air. Like it was and people were really pumped to see her. And that Willow and Riho match, I don't know how it came off on TV, but that match was a banger too. That was the crowd was really into that match. That was a great match.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, if the crowd was okay with that being the main event. That's why I asked if anything happened afterwards. Because, you know, you don't pay to go to TD Garden Arena to see AEW and expect Willow and Riho to be the finale of the evening in front of, you know, 10,000 people almost. And so, yeah, was there any sense when it was over? Like, the crowd's like, well now when did the big stars come out? Or was it like, oh, this was a fitting end. We got to see Mercedes, and this was a good show. Kind of talk about that vibe as things wound down and the lights came up.
Yeah, you know, that show was so loaded, and people were just so pumped. I mean, I know, like, the people sitting around me, we were all just like, I can't believe that we're about to see Okada, Ospreay, and Jay White, like, on one show. Like, you know, that show was just so loaded. And then once they kind of – I know when we sat down, I was with a bunch of people, and we were trying to figure out, like, were they just going to have Mercedes debut right away to kick off the show, or were they going to wait for that, you know, the Riho match, have her come out then? So once they announced that as the main event, I think everybody kind of knew, like, oh, something's going to happen at the end with you know, Mercedes. So I don't think the people were mad or anything. And then that match was so good, too. I think people were, like, hyped on that match, and then we were just kind of waiting for Mercedes to come out. But, I mean, the show is so loaded. I mean, if you were mad about that being the main event, I mean, you got – that's your own problem. You know what I mean? Like...
Eric, what do you think of the main event? We haven't talked about that yet.
You know, Riho always gets over, and, you know, she's like the Weird Al Yankovic of wrestling. Every time Weird Al comes back, he's been gone for 4 years, and then he's a star again. And that seems to be the case with Riho. She's gone for 6 months, and then she comes back, and she's over again. I think, you know, my first question, the match was good. It wasn't great. My question before Mercedes came out was, where the hell is Chris Statlander, right? That's her tag team partner, who has been leaning toward a heel turn with Stokely Hathaway. But, you know, I quickly forgot about that when they set the table for Mercedes to make the save. And, you know, presumably, have they announced when they're going to have the inevitable tag match?
No. No. I mean, honestly, I'm glad they didn't – I don't know. They would have been fine to announce it for next week, but I like the idea of doing more to establish it and then having that as a hook for 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, and I would assume off that tag match that you're not putting the Queen Spooky from House of Blackout. You're not putting her TV title on Mercedes Moné. They're not setting that up. They're setting up Willow to get the TV title shot, and Mercedes is just there to help her and, you know, eventually get a match against Willow, because, you know, when Mercedes said that she has unfinished business, including with Willow Nightingale, I don't know that maybe the announcers eventually explain that. Probably not, but that's the match that Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Moné in New Japan, I think on an American New Japan show. That's where Mercedes fell when trying to do a move off the top rope and broke her ankle or leg or whatever injury she had that kept her out a long time. So that was the match where they, you know, Mercedes wisely decided, I'm not supposed to lose the belt, but I think I just broke my foot or ankle or leg, yeah. And let's and they had to get the referee and wise up the referee and do the finisher twice, but while she was injured, but you know, so Mercedes is in AEW to get her win back on Willow Nightingale.
Did they? If you knew Mercedes is coming in this week, and you hopefully had a pretty good idea of how you're going to feature her, and that she would be involved, they'd be doing a follow-up on the Willow situation, they'd end up being friends in the end. Should you do more to build up Riho Willow the last couple of weeks and set the stage better than they did with just a vignette tonight? And, I mean, when Mercedes says our main event tonight, Riho and Willow, you're like, oh, well, you don't really mean the last match on the show, right? And then you have to recalibrate, go, oh, wait, Mercedes is going to be out there, so that makes it a main event. But should they have done more to build it up?
I mean, they had a storyline with Statlander losing to Julia Hart last week on TV. I think it was Dynamite. It might have been Collision. And so, you know, that's the storyline build as well. Stat couldn't get it done. Maybe Willow, her tag team partner, could get it done against Riho.
But announce it and, you know, like, I mean, spread the storyline out and announce it and, you know, build. If we're trying, I mean, maybe the idea is let's see what Mercedes can draw without a well-established advertised ahead of time with promos and an angle that the Dynamite proper audience is invested in. If they are, you know, I mean, it was Jason Powell's number one critique, because, you know, it would have been nice if they did more to build that up over at ProWrestling.net. And I agree. I mean, it's just, I think, you know, Tony watches all the product and it's just like, you know, photographic memory recall of everything he's ever done. And I don't think he relates to the fans who see that stuff as Rampage, Collision, prelim, filler, and suddenly it's the main event, you know? And it's like, I don't think that was flagged to fans. And so that was a little jarring. I think that's the larger point. It's not that you can't point out things were done. It's just, were they done in a way that flagged it as a big deal that could actually headline a big episode of Dynamite? But it's good that Taylor said that wasn't an issue with the fans.
Yeah, I don't think that was the intention to build it up as a big match, because that would be impossible to do.
Well, big match, I guess, irrelevant that fans are invested enough in that it's not jarring that it's closing out a Dynamite suddenly out of nowhere.
It got more build-up than many AEW matches do in that it had a reference to setup the week before. So
that's true, yeah.
You take your small victories where you can.
I guess, yeah. Yeah. All right, Taylor, back to you. What was the slowest part of the show? Was there any part of this where it felt low energy and the crowd was catching their breath?
Yeah, the Jericho match. There were certain points of that match where you could, like, hear a pin drop, kind of. I don't know if it kind of came across like that on TV. I just feel like at this point, like, I felt like it for a while. I just feel like Jericho's just got to go away for a little bit. I just think he's just really stale right now. He's back to the lion hot thing now. I just feel like they have enough people now that, like, they don't really need him right now. Just let him go and just kind of come back refreshed, you know, let the fans miss him. He hasn't been off TV since kind of AEW started. I just think it's time. You know, that match is kind of like, I guess if that was a match where everybody kind of got up to go to the bathroom or whatever, that was the match.
What was the reaction like for Jay White? You know, I think the idea and the angle tonight is let's just get him off of this kind of mid-card silliness. Let's split him off. He is an opponent who can do some special things against Will Ospreay and be a top-tier guy for us, but he hasn't been lately. Did he seem ice cold? Were people into him?
The crowd really seemed into him. I think the crowd was pretty hyped for that match. I know, like, the people that were sitting around me, we were all just like, Darby's leaving to go climb Mount Everest. This is his last match before he does that. Like, what is this insane person going to do tonight? I think I was just kind of like, what's going to be, like, his, like, swan song about, you know, I'm going to climb Everest. I'll see you in a few months. It was nice to see Jay White out there just kind of wrestling one-on-one with, and then, of course, they bring all the nonsense in with the, you know, the scissor gang and all that crap. I just hope that is just over soon and he just gets back to just kind of being, you know, Switchblade by himself, having great matches. You know, he's really good on the mic. They just got to get him away from this daddy-ass nonsense, and I just hope that ends soon.
And keep Billy Gunn away from Jay White. The optics are awful. Jay White, you want to be a heavyweight title contender, and he is small. And it usually doesn't matter in AEW. But Billy Gunn is uselessly huge, and he makes other people look small. I think Jericho and Hook were standing on a platform, and Renee was, you know, behind them, so they looked taller. Like, WWE does that all the time, and it's smart. This is a business of optics. And Billy Gunn is close to 60 and no selling a bunch of moves and kicking out of moves. He shouldn't be on pay-per-views. He's been selfish in certain ways in his entire run as an on-air act. And Jay White's too valuable to have him just looking like this little flight guy next to him. I mean, it's just so frustrating because you just have to know better about that. So if Billy Gunn's 28 years old and you think he's going to be a breakout star, that's fine. But my God, he's so uselessly big, and he towers over almost every top person they have there, and he just shouldn't. He makes Max Caster look small, you know, makes Bowens look small. I just, and not everybody's hung up on that, but it's, you know, there's, it matters to some degree, you know, when somebody like Gunn is just towering over other people. So anyway, I have to rant on Billy every once in a while.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I will say, though, I thought maybe that I don't know, like, how injured, how close Juice Robinson is to coming back or how injured he is. But, I mean, I know everybody always calls and says, like, how horrible the merch stands are at these Dynamites, and it was horrible tonight. But they randomly had, like, a $60 Juice Robinson, like, cardboard cutout. And I was like, that's really weird. I go, I wonder if Juice is coming back tonight. Because it was like, so when all that was on, like, and all the run-ins and stuff, I was kind of waiting for, like, Juice to come. But he didn't, so I don't know. They must just have a huge inventory of those.
That's the thing. Those should be on clearance at TJ Maxx. They shouldn't be taking up space at your merch stand at a Boston event. Your Boston event should have Okada, Ospreay, Mercedes, Hook, Julia Hart. Like, I mean, the people you're pushing it, come on, get
Taylor, did you see a lot of Mercedes shirts? I heard complaints that the shirts that they were selling were ugly or weren't very good, but I haven't even seen them.
Yeah, it was just like a black, it was like a black shirt. It was lime green on the front that said like, I think it said like CEO Boston. And then on the back, it said I was there. But yeah, no, it's just like a plain generic, like no kind of thought, no design into it. They had an Okada shirt, but even that shirt was kind of plain and not that great. And then just like a bunch of like generic, like AEW shirts. I think maybe a Young Bucks shirt. And then just like a lot of title belts and stuff.
So
man, maybe they should bring back Dana Massey, who used to do the merch for him, huh?
If you go to shop AEW right now, shopaw.com, the top item is some Sting doll, a brawler buddy. Danhausen is in the top row along with the generic AEW logo. You have to scroll down to get the top sellers of the week. Which includes Sting and a couple Will Ospreay shirts, including Bruv, and then two Okada shirts, including a colorful one kind of matching their new color scheme. There is nothing available to order right now with Mercedes. And it's just like, it's lost money. I mean, like, you should have the stuff ready to go, and your website should be plastered. It should be a splash page. Buy your Mercedes t-shirt.
You should
and
send an email to your email list. Now Mercedes is here.
Yeah, yeah.
WWE does that all the time. New Japan even does that all the time.
Yeah. And I don't know what her deal is, if she gets a cut of it or not, but I mean, someone's going to get a cut of it, and it's not just about the profit for the company. I mean, I know that's a topic of analysis, and I understand that, and we do it too, but it's also give the fans what they want, like actually what they want, not a hug in the middle of the ring with a camera going. Give the fans what they want. They want to be able to show up. They want to walk around Boston tomorrow with a Mercedes t-shirt to let people know in their lives and strangers that they were at the show and they're fans of hers and she's an AEW, and they didn't give them a good chance to do that with their merch tape. I mean, some fans obviously got the t-shirts, but people who weren't in the building have no way to get it apparently right now. Taylor, talk about Darby and the crowd response to him. You know, are they going to allow – is he still climbing Mount Everest? Like, are they going to allow him in his physical condition to do that? Shouldn't there be somebody keeping track of someone who's already on death's doorstep trying to accomplish that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the people that were in my section, we were all just kind of like, what's he going to do? Like, this is
yeah. –
you know, he's leaving for a few months. Like, what is this maniac, like, going to do? And then, but we kind of gave him, like, after – you know, after they went to commercial and stuff, there was like a nice like Darby chant for him. But like he was selling his injury like all the way out. Like I thought maybe he would have put his hand up or whatever to the crowd, or whatever. But he didn't. And then I thought it was when the Acclaimed were carrying him out, and then they kind of like just dropped him and ran back into the ring. I thought that was funny. Like I turned to the guy next to me and I was like, so is Darby just like on the floor over there, like dead? Like did they just drop him on the ground and leave him there to run back into the ring?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I guess they did. He was just kind of just laying there. So I was like, you know, poor Dobby's over there, you know, with a broken ankle, getting ready to climb Everest. It's just on the ground laying there.
Yeah, yeah. Crowd reaction wise, where did Darby fit in compared to Mercedes and Ospreay, and I've got Okada in the box coming up next on my question list for you. But first,
I would say that like Darby was just like a tier below them. You know, I've for whatever reason that Darby's been in a lot of Boston shows, but he always gets a solid reaction. But he was just like a hair under, you know, the major guys today.
So what kind of superstar response did Okada get from this Boston East Coast AEW crowd? A lot of them showing up, anticipating seeing Mercedes Moné. They know, you know, but where, what kind of response did Okada get? Obviously there's people are going to boo him and storyline wise or whatever, but you know, when you're a big enough star that, you know, happens with Roman Reigns, you know, people respond in a big way to him and then they kind of draw themselves out of, oh, it's a star. I can't believe I'm in his presence. And then they get to booing him. How was it for Okada?
Yeah, I mean, he got a really good response. I don't know how it came off on TV. I don't think it was as big as like Ospreay and Mercedes, you know, like you guys were kind of talking about earlier, I just don't know if a lot of people, I'm just not sure if it was a lot of Sasha fans in there tonight who were like, you know, WWE fans who just kind of follow Sasha. But like you said, I just don't know if a lot of people kind of know Okada and his story and kind of what he did in New Japan. I know as a fan, I mean, I don't know how many fans are like me, but like, when AEW first started, and like I said, like I used to search these matches like on YouTube, like I would go and kind of like try to find the backstory of like these guys like coming in, you know, to go try to find like their matches or whatever. So, you know, I don't know if there's how many fans out there. Like I'll be honest, I never thought I was ever going to see Okada live. You know what I mean? That's so, you know, I was hyped to see him, and you know, a lot of people were, but I would say his entrance was kind of like I said, this a little bit below, you know, Sasha and Ospreay, and I think people are just like pumped for Ospreay. I mean, he's got great entrance music. You know, like you said earlier, people already know when to scream Ospreay, Ospreay. He's just so full of energy and like so full of life in there. So it was pretty cool. But like I said, it was like probably a tick below them.
Did the Young Bucks have heel heat? Were crowds reacting to them?
Oh yeah, everyone was, you know, and they play it up too, which is fun. You know, I was sitting in the lower section, you know, facing like the hard cam. So they were constantly like turning at my section and screaming and yelling at us to try to, you know, just try to get a reaction from us because we were, you know, it's probably on camera or whatever. But yeah, no, a lot of middle fingers, a lot of FU Matthews, which was fun. But yeah, so they definitely got a lot of heel heat.
What was the last thing I was going to ask? Oh, maybe not the last thing, but Samoa Joe and Wardlow. I mean, AEW had a world title match. We've barely, if at all, mentioned it tonight. Talk about the crowd reaction for Wardlow as a heel, Samoa Joe as the badass, you know, tweener, whatever, you know, just contextual top world champion. Were people into the match? Were they into this? It was a tough spot coming after all the energy from Mercedes.
Yeah, I mean, people are into the match. I mean, it's kind of tough when you know kind of what the outcome's going to be. I think people were just kind of waiting to see what was going to kind of happen after with Swerve, if Swerve was going to come out or not. But, yeah, I mean, those chops were brutal live. You know, they took a lot of big bumps. I just feel like it, in a title match like that, when you kind of know, you know, what the finish is going to be, you just kind of like, all right, like what's going to happen after here? Like, where is this story kind of going now? I kind of feel bad for Wardlow. I mean, I like Wardlow a lot. I just don't know what they're going to do with him now, you know, to lose clean in the middle of the ring like that. I don't know if now he's going to get kicked out of the Undisputed Era, you know, what's going to happen. Like, I don't know how far off Cole is from coming back. A couple of people around me were kind of, when he started like posing, he had hit a big move on Joe and he started like, he does that thing now where he poses and looks at the, you know, the big Tron. A couple of people around me were like, is MJF about to come right now? Kind of like ruin your shot at this title. Yeah. So I just think everybody was kind of like, all right, like what's just kind of like anticipating, like who's going to come out, like where are they going to go with this, more than like thinking that Wardlow was going to actually win the match.
Do you think Swerve Strickland came across as lost in the mix a bit with all these new stars showing up, or Is he in a safe spot that AEW fans, even this Boston crowd, maybe a little atypical in terms of size and who it drew, are very into Swerve?
No, I think he's in a safe spot right now, but if Ospreay keeps going in like just this trajectory, I think it might be tough for him. I don't know if they're going to put the belt on him and kind of have him go into Wembley with the belt and do like Ospreay Swerve. But I think he could be in a tough spot right now if Ospreay, keeps going this way.
Eric, is there anything else you want to jump in with in terms of a question for Taylor?
Well, I would ask about Rampage spoilers, except I saw the lineup, but I'm not sure I care about anything other than they're going to announce the brackets for the tag team tournament. I'm interested in that, but the matches themselves look pretty weak lineup.
And Taylor, you left before that.
Yeah, I've been at a work conference the last 2 days, and I myself saw the lineup, and I was like, I think it's time for me to head home and go get some sleep from this 2-day work conference I've been at.
Yep, no, sometimes you gotta do that. That makes sense. Cool, Taylor. Anything else you want to add?
I'm just kind of while I was driving home, I was just kind of thinking to myself, like, you know, it seems like they're gonna do Mercedes Willow to start off, but like, do you know kind of what is going on with like how far off Jamie? Like, I'd love to see Mercedes Jamie Hayter. Like, I think that match would be awesome. Do you know like how far off like Hayter is from being healthy and being back? I know people are pretty pumped to see like a Britt Baker, but I'm more excited to see Hayter Mercedes than I am Britt Baker Mercedes.
So she injured her shoulder, I guess, pretty badly sometime before, because the blow off was the Double or Nothing pay per view Memorial Day weekend in late May. Yeah. So I mean, it's been 10 months already. So that's, you know, shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, the idea was she'd be back. It wasn't it early this, you know, the idea was early this year, and we're still in that window of early this year, but we're getting close to exiting to mid year. But I haven't heard. So I'll ask and see if I can't get a little update and do some reporting on that.
Yeah. And then is Britt hurt, or are they just kind of cooling her off, waiting for something for her to come back? Cause I kind of felt like those last couple months with her, I kind of felt like she kind of regressed a little bit. I didn't know if it was like an injury or then they just kind of took her off TV because I kind of maybe saw a regression or what. Was she hurt or do you think they are going to go kind of Britt Mercedes after this kind of mini feud she's going to do with Nightingale?
It sounds like it could be imminent. I mean, Tony Khan's been hinting about her. She could be back any time, and Britt Baker talked some interview or something about wanting to come back, being eager to come back. So, yeah, and I think she, whatever was going on with her, I think she is ready to come back. So I think, you know, it might have been delayed because they want to just get Mercedes through a couple things first, you know, just kind of introduce her, not against Britt right away, and then have Britt come back. And I don't know. I mean, Eric, do you think that Britt's first thing when she comes back should be getting in the face of Mercedes? I mean, with Britt's history and being a heel and being sort of an AEW original and a honorary, unofficial, official, whatever pillar, none of them are left. That's a good move, you know, have her get in the face of Mercedes when she returns after all this time off.
You certainly could. I think Britt will get a big pop on her return. She's been gone long enough, and as you point out, Wade, she is an AEW original and was, you know, until – you know, 2023 was a bit of a wash for her, but before that, she was still a pretty big star in that company, the focus of the women's division, even when she didn't have the belt. So you can go, the great thing about Mercedes and Britt is you can go a lot of different ways with that, right? Because Mercedes is doing the happy, smiley baby face, we're happy you're here routine now, but she can easily pivot to a heel, right?
If you want to.
I know AEW does too many turns.
You're giving Todd Martin in. Brain aneurysm talking about that already.
But Britt as well has worked as a heel and a face. So you've got in AEW, as we've seen with Samoa Joe tonight, he was sort of the baby face, but he'll be the heel against Swerve. And the same has been true with Bryan Danielson and the Blackpool Combat Club. The face heel thing gets blurred a little bit. And so you got options. So I like the idea of Britt coming back, let's say, at the St. Louis pay-per-view on April 21st, Dynasty, and you know, getting in the face of, or the Dynamite after, getting in the face of Mercedes.
All right, Taylor, appreciate you calling in. Really enjoyed the conversation with you. Good to get a sense of the building tonight.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. I always have fun calling in when I go to the Boston show. So, you know, I appreciate letting me call in and talk. And I hope you guys have a good night. And I work from home, and, you know, I listen to everything that you do. So everyone should just go VIP, especially if you work from home. Good podcast to listen to get you through the workday. So hope you guys have a good night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it very much, Taylor. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Just let us know that you're attending a show. Put the city and the date in the subject line if you can. That makes it a little easier to stay organized. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. You can do what Taylor just did and be part of the show and share your experience. All right, let's get to more call stack.
I have a bone to pick with you before we take the next caller.
I transitioned so quickly because I don't want our callers to hang up because they've been on hold so long. So, but pick your bone quickly.
No, go ahead. Take the call. I have the bone picked.
Save it. Yeah, I don't want Doug and Greg and Deke to hang up on us here. All right, Doug, we'll go to you next. Larry, not Greg. We already talked to Greg. Doug, welcome. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Donovan?
Oh, hi. So I think most people, we talked about Mercedes Monet. So, what do you think about why did they even do the Jay White Gold Group and Acclaim when they just broke them up so quickly? Like, what was the point of that?
Yeah. It was running through my mind, Eric, watching that it felt like they were pulling the plug on it right away. I think I mentioned on The Fix last week in sort of a confusing way, like, let's get over it. And Todd thought I was talking about Max Caster's rapping. I'm like, no, just this whole alliance of all, you know, of the Bang Bang Scissors gang. And I don't know, maybe somebody heard that and said, okay, if Wade says we should move on, let's move on. Let's speed it up. Honestly, I cannot have been alone in thinking this was weird. It was, you know, bad use of Jay White. AW's taking heat for it. My hoping is it's a audible that they just said, let's accelerate this and get away from it. And move on to something more serious. Eric, did you have that sense with all they put into it, that this seemed like an accelerated breakup?
Doug, you make a valid point and ask a great question. Why? I was like, so I'm watching this match and I'm like, okay, we already know who's going to win. Jay White's going over Darby, but how? That's the question I had. Jay is sort of been a fake pandering babyface with the babyface six man group. I wondered, well, what's next for Jay? Like, he lost his world title match to MJF in November, and they just went to the – I'm like, oh, crap, he's in that stupid six-man stuff. So they went to it right away. Like, they've teased tension, like Jay White didn't come in for the whole match, and then he came in to hit his finisher and take a pin on one of the end, you know, I don't know if that was Collision, I don't know if it was Rampage, right? One of those shows. And so that's been like the only, you know, they didn't have enough time to sort of break them up, join them up and break them up before the last pay-per-view Revolution. So I'm like, I figured they would get around to it maybe for Dynasty on April 21st. And yeah, my notes say split was somewhat abrupt. I don't know why they did it tonight. If they were going to do, you know, unify the six-man belts, the ROH six-man belts with the AEW six-man belts, you could do that on the pay-per-view, but there's still five Dynamites and six Collisions and six Rampages before the pay-per-view. So it's like, I don't know why they did it tonight. You could have saved that for a week when there was less going on and it wouldn't have got buried, and we would not all be sitting here asking the same question, why?
Exactly. Yeah.
Well,
I'll ask around and find out and report on it, Doug. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. Like to me, it cooled down the Acclaim, because the Acclaim was pretty hot for a while, and then
they were.
No. Oh, okay.
They were like one of Tony Khan's favorite acts for a while, and I mean, they had a run at the top of the tag division. Eric, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was there at one of the it was the last All Out that they had in the suburbs instead of the United Center. And I was there the night "Oh Scissor Me Daddy" was born as a chant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it got over, and he quickly pivoted to the rematch. The Acclaimed did not prevail that night over Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, but he quickly ran it back at the Shea State, the Arthur Ashe New York show a couple weeks later, and they won the belts, right? So I was there, and the whole thing has always just been because fans like to say "Daddy Ass" and "Scissor Me Daddy," and that's run its course. I still think there's potentially money in the Acclaimed as an act, and but just, you know, do right by the storyline. Don't bury it and make it make a little more sense than they did tonight.
What else, Doug?
That's basically what I had. The only other thing I want to say is I got the Waterloo joke. Waterloo.
good.
Average Eric, joke. I got that joke.
Thank
right
you.
Away.
I feel vindicated. It's
but
great
it
I have words for you. Guns up. Yes.
but it took me longer. Unfortunately, I've just discredited myself because it took me a long time to figure out the CEO, like the boss thing. Like that's what they were going for, right? The CEO is the boss. Is that what they're going for?
I don't think there's more to it than that.
It took,
where? No. Yeah. And it's to put her in, give her a spot
while,
higher than the spot.
Yeah, it took me a while getting that one, but the average joke I got right away. So, anyways, you guys have a good night, and we'll talk to you later.
Awesome. Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go to Larry from Beardstown and then Deke from Michigan on deck. Larry, welcome.
Hey,
what's going on ice tonight?
Well, you've covered at least some of what I wanted to discuss. You just hit the
I would hope so after
90 minutes. Yeah, it was the Scissor Gang and White and the Guns and everything. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the show ending with, Willow and Mercedes and Sky Blue, and what was it that the previous caller called Julia Hart? I got a laugh out of.
That was probably
Spooky
me.
Something or another.
Queen Spooky. Yeah, I think. Yeah, I couldn't remember her name. I was struggling, so I came up with a nickname.
I got a fantastic laugh out of that. And before I go into that, AEW is actually going to be sort of AEW is going to be sort of in my area, going to be about probably 70, 75 miles from me up in Peoria the night before the AEW Dynasty show with a show they're going to do the Collision and Tape Rampage up there the night before.
Larry, did you buy a ticket yet?
Not yet. I've just checked earlier to see what ticket prices were, and right now they're not horrible, really. You can get half-decent seats, maybe in the second deck, some parts of the sides of the ring, $25-$30 a pop. They're not dirt cheap, but they're not horrible. They're running a four-pack and five-pack ticket plan for it as
probably
well. The Civic Center's got...
They haven't even sold 1,000 tickets yet after the on sale Monday, the pre-sale. So, Larry, you're one of the reasons here they haven't sold 1,000 tickets yet. But if you wait until the night before, you probably get one for $5.
Yeah, I feel so horrible. My sympathy knows no beginning. But the Civic Center has got a relatively long history. WCW ran shows there. That was where Chris Jericho last wrestled his last WCW match before he went to the WWE in 1999. Fun bit of history there.
Cool.
And WWE ran their holiday tour show, one of their shows up there, I think it was December of 2023, drew about 3,000-ish. The center can hold probably 8,000, 9,000 for wrestling, but I'm expecting if they can do 3,000 to 4,000 for AEW, I think they'll do pretty good.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Anything else, sorry, about tonight's show?
Yes, I want to ask you to, with what happened there, could they, with setting up a tag, could that plant another seed for a possible Statlander heel turn? I could see, hey, we're having problems with these two. I'm here to help you. I'm your friend. Why are you going with this outsider? Would that kind of add a little fuel to that? Do you think that could be interesting?
Yeah, because they've had this Willow, Statlander, Stokely thing going on, and it just sort of got, you know, set aside tonight, and I could see them laying low so they can do something like that when the tag match happens, and maybe that's what Mercedes' promo next week is, Eric. It involves, you know, Statlander showing up to offer some help, and maybe Mercedes' first interaction with Stokely. What do you think?
Well, my questions, if I'm Willow Nightingale, is as I'm getting my butt kicked by these two, the two spooky queen and spooky princess, where was Chris Statlander and Stokely? Why didn't they come help me? Why did it have to be Mercedes Moné? And probably the answer to that is because that was the obvious booking to bring Mercedes back at the end of the night to try and save the quarter eight rating. But certainly from a storyline perspective, if you're Willow, you'd be asking, where was Stat? Where was Stoke? And Statlander has clearly, you know, she's on a losing streak somewhat-ish for her because she won't cheat. She won't do what Stokely wants her to do and give in to the dark side. And Willow is about as natural of a baby face as you'll ever see. And so just super connection with the fans. So, yeah, I think Stat, you know, if you're doing from Statlander's perspective, why, you know, why are you teaming with Mercedes? Why are you ditching me? I had thought that AEW, I think they have Megan Bain under contract. She'd made a few appearances, I think, on the dark shows over the years, but she went to Stardom in New Japan where she's a tall person. So she was domineering, you know, monster American heel, and she left Stardom, I don't know, maybe October, November, her last match might have been. And I thought she was headed back to AEW, where she's allegedly under contract. And I figured she was going to be ultimately revealed as Stokes, you know, monster heel to come take on Statlander and Willow. And that Camille Brickhouse, who was the NWA Women's Champion for a while, she was reportedly spotted backstage at an AEW event, hasn't signed yet with NXT, so I thought maybe he'd have a, you know, a monster tag team to take on Willow and Statlander, but sure seems like they're going away from that now, pivoting to, you know, a Mercedes storyline.
Larry, anything else you want to bring up?
No, I think that would about do it. Thanks for taking my call, and as always, so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, Larry. I always look forward to your tagline at the end. We'll talk to you soon. All right, well, I'll wrap up the caller portion with Deke, and then we'll get a few quick emails in on this big episode of the post show, following a big episode of Dynamite.
Plus the bone I have to pick with you.
Yes,
another teaser number two for those of you still listening.
We might make that the VIP exclusive after show, Eric. No, I'm kidding. Deke, go ahead.
Hey, fellas, what's going on? Sorry I missed. I got to be honest. I missed, like, the first hour and a half of the show. So did anybody, like, murder what happened today? Did anybody do that?
No.
Did I miss it?
Everybody liked it, but you missed Wade burying the town of Waterloo, Iowa. That's about all you missed on the show, I would say.
That is not true.
Well, dang it, Wade. Wade comes from the land of a thousand lakes, and he has to drive down whatever the frick, I-60, whatever it is, to get down to Waterloo every year. It's such a pain in the butt. So you got to give Wade. You got to give Wade.
Deke, you're giving Eric too much credit for telling the truth.
I believe he said Waterloo. Outside of the downtown, it's a
no, I'm giving you
suburban
too much
chain
credit,
restaurant,
Wade.
Health
Wade,
game.
I
didn't say health
game. Too much credit. Wait, I'm giving you too much credit, big fella, but no, it's fine, dude. No. So, okay, here's the deal.
Right.
I did not watch this show at all. I tuned in at 10, I saw Okada.
Yep.
That's when I tuned in. I was doing something else, and I tuned in, I saw Okada, and I went, he's out there with the Young Bucks. How on earth are you bringing this guy? And everybody's going to kill me. Oh, you heard AEW? Yeah, I do. They brought this guy out here with the Young Bucks. And I saw that whole thing, and I'm like, okay, whatever. And then I saw the Mercedes thing online. Okay, the Mercedes thing. Nobody has killed her yet on this, what are we, 2 hours deep, Wade? Nobody's killed her yet?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
we got to ring you in a bit here. I'm fatigued.
What did you expect? What did you expect tonight? Well, because I expected people to murder this. Nobody murdered this? That's what I'm getting at. That's what
Zeke,
I keep
we've heard.
Nobody murdered
Zeke,
this? What did you expect tonight? What did you expect tonight?
Hold on.
I'm telling
you.
What did you expect tonight?
Zeke. We've heard you say that no one's murdered it yet. I and over and over and over again. What do you mean?
Yeah,
you didn't see it, but you didn't like it?
Well, no. That's what you wanted tonight out of her in her first night? That's what you wanted?
Yeah, it was good. What's your problem with it?
Well, she came out and did a 15-minute promo at the start of the show.
Yeah,
and then
it was part of the main event and
promo.
Set up an angle for next week.
You just said it. 15-minute promo for Mercedes. You don't even know her real name. And that's not even ripping on you, Wade, because you're not the only one. Every single one of you, none of you know her name. You don't know her name. Her name's not
Mercedes
Moné.
Fernando?
No, her name is Money. Mercedes Money. You don't even know her name. Her name is Mercedes Money. That tells you where
money,
she's
like
at.
A play
that
on
tells
money.
You where she's at.
Money.
That tells you
right,
where
yes.
she's at. That tells you where she's at. You don't even know her name.
Zeke, I do have to get the show to the producer soon, and so I want to give you a chance to say one final thing.
No, I want to hear your answer to that, because that's it. You're putting her on a pedestal she's not at. Guess what? A bunch of us did not see her and Bailey in Brooklyn 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah.
We don't care. I don't watch. You know me because I call all the time.
Yep.
I don't watch NXT. I don't watch NXT now, let alone 10 years ago. I don't care. All I know about her is all I know about her is bad stuff. I don't care. So why is this such a big deal? And it's such a small deal that you, as my guy, I subscribed to you for 15 years. You don't even know her name right. Nobody.
All right. So, Deke, we got you. We got you. I'm not kidding. I got to wrap up. Eric, so I got to pause you here. I got your point. Eric, I do think there are in this, Deke is among the examples of people who I think are saying, prove to me that you deserve all this hype. Prove to me that you are this big star that everybody's excited about getting. And Deke is expressing he's not sold yet. Now, he didn't tune in enough to see it. He saw it got in the Bucks. So, you know, he can listen to the beginning of the show, and if he has DVR or whatever, or watch highlights online, see what he thinks, and call back. I want to get his impression, and especially like 2-3 weeks from now, does there's people who say that about Okada and Ospreay. Like, show me. Okada just looks like a guy out there. He throws a dropkick like Hardcore Holly. I didn't expect that name to be dropped in comparison to Okada tonight by Taz. But everybody's got something to prove. You know, if you don't walk into AEW with a big contract and think you have to prove yourself, you're going to underachieve. And you know, Okada gets to be cocky and act like he's all that already, but Ospreay's going to go out there and prove it. But so does Mercedes, as I said. It's not 1 week do a biographical promo and then think you've made it. You got guaranteed money for years. And, you know, it seems like she's got the pride to try to win people like Deke over. just as you hope Okada and Ospreay also want to win people over who aren't familiar with their work.
I think it would have been difficult to put together a video package tonight explaining to people who Mercedes Moné is.
Yeah.
All the videos owned by WWE.
Money. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, this just broad statement. Every week you got new viewers. Every week some of your regular viewers are going to be people who are regular viewers because they started watching AEW and they haven't watched other products. And you don't want to exclude them. You want to make them feel part of things. No clubhouse humor. Don't assume knowledge. Don't expect people to do research. As Cody Rhodes said early on, you know, our content should be self-contained. No one should have to watch older content to figure out what's going on or know people's background. You don't want to seem like you're walking into a dinner party and everyone's telling inside jokes and you don't get any of them. So that's an issue. All right.
You do not need to torture yourself on this one. There are some stars in wrestling who are such big names, Hulk Hogan, The Rock, I'd include Punk and Mercedes Moné among them. They don't need video packages upon introduction.
Oh, 100%. 100% agree. That said, it's not about your past. It's about now. That's my point. What does Mercedes – you can apply this to Adam Copeland for that matter, but especially people who are in their prime and have years to go. You want to walk in and go, my past, my past. And it got me my contract. It got me this crowd pop. But I want to build this audience. I want to add. Kurt Angle said it when he got signed by TNA. We're going to double the ratings. We're going to be at 2 million viewers instead of 1. It didn't happen, but that's what you want to hear from a top star who's signed to a big contract is, I want to expand the audience, but I know I have to work for it because I want to create a whole new fan base. And I think that's what Deke's point probably was, and other callers have talked about that with Okada. Make me a fan of yours. Don't walk in like you already – like you've – it's my job to understand what a big star you are. Show me week after week after week after week. And I think she will.
It's a good thing most AEW fans probably are unaware Mercedes referred to WWE as her home. Just the other day.
Yeah. All right, let's speed through some emails here. Shay from Brooklyn says, what a great episode tonight. Seems like they got up to just about 9,500 in the arena, and it sounded like it. Just a solid episode all the way through, except maybe the Jericho portion. As a female fan watching Mercedes debut the way she did, with all the support and hype behind her, really was great to see. Growing up, women's wrestling was presented so different to me. A lot has changed over the years. Realistically, I couldn't imagine a female star ever being showcased this way. She really shined like a star tonight. Willow and Riho delivered a nice main event too, although I wish it was longer. While Ospreay continues to be a fantastic free agent signing, everyone's talked about his in-ring work and for good reason, but this man is the total package. I didn't know he could speak the way he does. Ospreay's killed it in every in-ring promo segment he's had so far. Super charismatic, feels completely authentic out there. I was already sold on the match, but tonight really sold his passion for it. He's become a top face in just a few weeks. The crowds are going crazy for him. There's no weakness in his game right now, and at only 30, it feels like he'll just get better with time, too. Tonight, Okada showed more personality than he had in all his previous AEW appearances combined. The short backstage segment may be the most English I've heard him speak, and it was all good. Facial expressions, too. Short and simple. He fits right in with the Bucks. His in-ring heel body language is also already clicking. I'm surprised they're doing the Okada-Eddie match next week. It wouldn't surprise me if he takes a title, especially since they made a point of saying Eddie is only defending the Continental title. We hardly knew ye, AEW Triple Crown. So Todd, good perspective from Shay, applauding the presentation of Mercedes and then bringing up the two other big names from this show, really kind of echoing, matching up with our thoughts. Anything you want to add to what Shay had to say?
I will take the fact that you just referred to me as Todd as high praise indeed. I will
take it.
No bigger compliment.
That's up to you.
Being called Todd Martin.
I don't know where that came from.
In the interest of your producer, a known hard case, you know, who cracks the whip, I will just say, yes, the Jericho is wrestling Hook next week, which feels completely rushed and unearned. Like, it just sort of came out of nowhere. I think being Chris Jericho's partner is a little like being the number two guy in Al-Qaeda back in the day, right? See, you know, Kenny Omega and Sammy Guevara, for different reasons, were supposed to be his partner, and now he's with Hook. The other thing, I thought the finish of that six-man tag was interesting because, you know, your traditional way to set up a title match in pro mm-hmm. wrestling at a pay-per-view, let's say, is challenger pinning champ, right, in a tag match, which is mm-hmm. what they did tonight. But I also figure Eddie has to lose to Okada in their singles match so they can establish Okada as the
right.
big heel that they claim him that they claim he is, and he in fact is. And Eddie's going to be eating two pins to Okada within a week, within 7 days here, which is really weird. I figured like Penta was the one most likely to lose the fall, if they were going to, you know, if they were going to go that way. So weird and interesting, and in both cases it feels sped up. Eddie Okada and Hook Jericho.
Yeah, I'm fine. I mean, this doesn't fit the AEW rankings. Is someone just getting a title shot immediately, you know, after a couple appearances on TV?
I believe the rankings have already been disappeared again.
They have, yes. That's the thing. It's like, I think they might have looked at ahead and said, oh, maybe we ought not do this now, because we just found, we reminded ourselves quickly. It's like, you know, if you drink too much and you get a bad hangover, and then you're like, I'm not going to drink again. And then, you know, whatever amount of time goes by, 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, a year, and then you drink too much again. Oh, that's right. That's what happened to the rankings. They're like, they got excited about doing them. And then like they woke up the next week after doing the first batch and going, oh, wow, none of the title shots we're planning have any credibility within a ranking system. Let's just pretend we didn't say we're bringing it back. That's what it seems like happened here. I'm fine with Okada with his stature coming in, but they should say so. You know, they should, you know, give some explanation for that, that, you know, some people are given a title shot because of their stature, and AEW keeps an eye on what people do outside of AEW, you know, in ROH, TNA, CMLL, whatever. And we take that into account when we give out title shots. And I think you can throw a line in there like that. And it just, you know, covers the base of people who are concerned about that. And I think rightfully so.
What I'm excited about is, if I assumed Eddie Okada was being set up for April 21st, the next pay-per-view,
mm-hmm.
if that's not the case, if they're blowing it off already next week, who's Okada going to be facing in St. Louis? I have a huge amount of FOMO because I'm 4 hours away from St. Louis and I can easily drive there.
Yeah.
But I just desperately just don't want to spend the money because I got one kid in college and another one about to be.
Oh, God.
But my FOMO is just rising each week as Will Ospreay comes out there and Bryan Danielson comes out there. And, you know, I'm getting a little itchy, a little twitchy about pulling the trigger on a St. Louis trip on the 21st.
My hunch will be a Kingston rematch.
Really?
I think they'll extend it. Yeah, I don't think it's a one and done.
So Eddie can eat three jobs to Okada in. I mean, not that that's not the proper way to book.
It's fine.
But it's just, you know, it's.
I mean, I love Eddie. No. Eddie can take losses. Okada should be established as better than Eddie Kingston. You know, I mean, he just should, and it's fine.
Yes.
People are gonna love Eddie anyway. But Okada should be firmly established, 3-0, 4-0 against Eddie. And Eddie should at the end go, okay, I guess I'm not as good as the best wrestler in the world. I found that out. Back to the gym. Well, that's what most wrestlers would say. Maybe not him. All right. Gene says, big fan of the Torch. How many of these random-ass tag teams is Hook going to be in? From Taz to Hookhausen, Jungle Hook, randomly teaming with Orange Cassidy for weeks, and now Jarrah Hook. I get he's green, but there's got to be something better for him to do. Is it just me, or is Jericho not as over without Judas? And then finally, Riho hitting all those suplexes on Willow, where Willow had obviously jumped to make them happen, was unbelievable, including the fact that she almost broke her neck on the Northern Lights. Yikes. Did that jump out to you, Eric, the leaping on the suplexes? I'm not a fan of that. You got to mask that well.
I mean, it's Riho. It there's no other way it happens.
That's the thing.
You know, physics, yeah.
Yeah. Hook, I think Hook's – I don't have a problem with Hook being with a bunch of random people. I mean, he's green. He's not – like, he didn't take to – pro wrestling like Kurt Angle in the same way, you know. I mean, Kurt came for the Olympics and was a great athlete, and then just suddenly was a great pro wrestler almost instantly. And Hook just got a different athletic, you know, pedigree and different way about him. And it's been a long journey, but he's got some X factors. There's a charisma, and he just kind of stands out as distinct. And he's a long term project, and he's young enough to be one. So putting him in bunch of tag teams, I think, is fine. I think he's looking more comfortable and better out there. What have you thought of Hook's progress? And then comment on Jericho a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hook is what I have heard described as a vibes wrestler, right?
There
it's
you
all
go.
Aura.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Roman Reigns, kind of, almost at this point. Like Roman Reigns used to be a pretty good worker, I think. And, you know, lately he's been more of a, he's not wrestling that much. He's more of a Brock Lesnar sort of pre-programmed high spot, hit the chorus instead of the verses kind of wrestler. Hook is, you know, the light version of that. He's a vibes guy with his entrance and is not talking and, you know, just trying to look cool. I used my best line about Jericho's tag partners being like the number two in Al-Qaeda, so I'm pretty much out of ammo there.
Yeah. All right, Jorad from Canada says, hi, guys. Just wondering where you think Adam Cole slots in once he's healthy and ready to return from injury. He and MJF were at the very top of the card at the end of All In London, but now with the debuts of Okada and Ospreay, I feel like he's really out of his league. By the way, for the love of God, change the Undisputed Kingdom's entrance theme. That stupid crown picture on the entrance screen looks amateur and the music is awful. I don't know what he did it backstage, but poor Wardlow is just wasting years of his career in AEW as long as he's part of this Undisputed garbage. Thanks and have a great night. I don't think Wardlow is being under-pushed. I think Wardlow is fine, but he's a novelty. He hasn't shown body language, facial expression, promo range. I mean, he had a nice match with Joe. Joe can have a good hard-hitting big man match with you. But I don't know. Wardlow just seems like the guy who everybody says, hey, are you a pro wrestler? But it doesn't mean you have kind of that intangible that Batista and Goldberg have. And he's just a notch short of that. I don't think he's a lot short of that, but he is not short of that. I don't know that WWE would do anything more with him, honestly.
It just occurred to me that Wardlow is to AEW what Karrion Kross is to WWE, right?
Yeah,
the guy looks like you should be looks like he should be it, but just isn't. So they did that story time with Adam Cole thing. I thought it was the start of a Saturday Night Live sketch, right? it was so overproduced, as you know, a lot of things with Adam Cole have historically been. I did get a chuckle out of the irony of Cole, who in a previous angle, I think the introductory angle to his group, said, Wardlow is going to win that belt. He's going to beat whoever has it, and he's going to hand it over to me when I'm ready to return. Yeah. Talking up Wardlow's prospects. I think Wardlow you keep in that group when MJF is ready to come back. That's his natural feud, and MJF can get his win back over Wardlow, who squashed him in a minute or whatever it was at Double or Nothing 2023. I want to say. And he can be, a gatekeeper guy that Adam Cole throws in the way as MJF tries to work his way back to getting his revenge at Adam Cole.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't 2023. That was just last year.
2022?
Yeah.
Whenever they did the goofy walkout thing.
I know, yeah. The 2022 is the year of MJF working himself into fans throwing their hands up and not caring anymore. How about Undisputed Kingdom's entrance theme and logo?
They have one. It's just not the script.
It's generic. All right. Let's see. JB, we're not going to get to all 14 of your questions today, although I'm always glad we get them. We'll go to Zach in Texas first. Rejoice, Mercedes Moné is officially All Elite. What a reaction she got in Boston. Given that AEW sold 9,400 tickets, I'd say the bet paid off. She looked great and came off like the star she is. I agree. When she announced that the women's match was main eventing, I figured she'd be back. I am surprised that she just saved Willow and seemed to insert herself into the TBS title picture. I was expecting a confrontation with Serena Deeb or a returning Britt Baker. It was smart to have her open and close the show, though. The Elite Trios match was so fun. Okada's so good at being an arrogant jerk, and Eddie is the perfect foe. I'm shocked the match is happening next week, and even more shocked it's only for one of the belts. In fact, I really dislike that move. The three belts make that title unique. Breaking them up makes it cookie-cutter third secondary title, Okada or not. It may not be ideal, but just put all three belts on Okada. Will Ospreay cut one hell of a promo? I was surprised not to see Don Callis at all. I assumed he gets involved in this at some point. The Bang Bang Scissors Gang is no more. Hallelujah. I've never been happier to see Billy Gunn hit in the face with a chair. I know Wade got out of his chair yelling and yelled about how he feels about Billy. Well, I waited till the podcast to do it. I'm just relieved Jay White can be a heel again without all the silliness. AEW's on a good path right now, and the roster is like the 2016 Golden State Warriors, an unbeatable super team. Had some things I want to say. Hey, Eric, what, anything in response to that?
I think we've covered all of it.
I know what I was going to say. I hope Tony Khan's new philosophy is big matches on every show. Just use them up. Like, he's been so conservative with this stuff. And we've had the, you know who's going to win every match. That's been a knock on them. You know, 6 out of 7 matches, fans, oh, yeah, I know who's going to win. It's always a top guy against a third-tier guy, and it goes too long. And the top guy wins, or it's a second tier guy against a fourth tier guy. You know, it's like, so if Tony ups it and starts going, we're just going to put top people against top people more often. WWE does that. They have the few that are special. You're only going to see them on pay-per-view, but it's not that many, but they know they're in the TV revenue business. So just start Throw, get Mercedes Moné in the ring every second week and make those matches count. Make the booking count. Have title matches. Have Okada wrestle regularly. Stop saving the big stars in big matches. They did that with Cody, and there were like, you know, eight
and
matches
Punk.
That Cody never had. Yeah, to a degree with Punk. It just felt like that was still start and stop with him. But, yeah, I mean, there was an element of that too. But Cody is the you know, real good example. He was just in the Cody-verse doing stuff with people who didn't matter, and there were big matches we never saw, and it's a shame.
QT Marshall blasphemy from Wade Keller.
Mm-hmm. And who is the QT side, the guy who shows up every once in a while?
Johnny TV?
No.
Anthony
QT.
Agogo?
Yeah, that's what I think of.
Yeah.
There's another guy in that group, too. Like, I can't even think of him on the spot here. Okay. JB, I'm going to skim for something that we definitely haven't. He says Okada's English is much better. If the plans to get Okada regularly booed, I think Tony needs to change the upbeat nature of his music, and the Bucks need to eliminate the coin drop bit. It may be fun to do at the moment, but it works against the goal of getting heel heat. That's a good point.
I love that entrance so much.
Well,
I know.
But
take it away, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, at some point, you don't want to get the pop. I mean, Sami Zayn took away the most upbeat, happy, you know, ebullient music ever when he turned heel, and then now he's back to it when he's a babyface. Yeah. So delay the gratification will be a big moment when he's a babyface, and hopefully 3 years, or at least two. I think it was a good idea to main event with Willow Riho with Moné. Yep. They claimed I'd like to see a stronger Jay White singles push now. Hopefully by All In, he is a big single, has a big singles match. Yes, I hope so too. How damaged is Jay White?
Jay White is somewhat polarizing. I like him. He has a very much a in his matches a Larry Zbyszko quality where the first 10 to 15 minutes are just him stalling outside the ring, building heel mm-hmm. heat, which you kind of can't really do on American television in the year 2024 or 1994 probably. But he does that. He was damaged by that MJF debacle, that pay-per-view long angle in November where MJF gets killed, gets taken out, and then comes back to beat Jay White's ass in the main event.
Jay White's body language conveyed backstage, he was not – I mean, I think there might have been more than just body language. It conveyed he was not happy with how he was treated there. I know he was asked the favor to fill in, but, man, MJF couldn't have made him – he couldn't have seemed more centered on himself and not taking into account the big picture with trying to protect Jay White a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, MJF was doing a late 90s WWE angle, right, basically. Oh. That was his homage to that. I think I'm curious where they go with him because he has top-tier heel potential because he's so good, can get over on the mic. He is just a SOB in the ring, right, with the cheating and the kind of his style is to sort of counterpunch and, just have people take his finisher out of nowhere. There's still – you can always rehabilitate him. I don't think he's lost. But my question was after, you know, Darby Allin is going away for a few months to climb Mount Everest. You could have put anybody on that AEW roster in there with Darby to give him the rub and give him the win. And they put Jay White in that position. So what does that mean? I mean, once he gets past the six-man, you know, goofiness, who is he being set up to be a top heel to feud with, right? That's the question I have, and I don't feel like I have any answers after tonight. But I'm curious where it's going to go. Because I'm high I'm high on Jay White.
Yeah. I'm getting nervous here because you're talking. My dog is rolling around on the floor right next to the power cable, the outlet that the power strip is plugged into that powers everything at my desk. He's finally gotten up and moved away, but he was rolling around and getting precariously close to that. So I lost my focus ever so briefly. All is well, though. Okay, he says, I don't think Prince Nana should have accompanied Swerve out to confront Joe tonight. Swerve came out angry and serious, as he should have, but Nana, fairly or not, takes away from that energy. I'm okay with Swerve being a part of the Swerve act, but tonight wasn't the night for it. Do you think Prince Nana should still be part of Swerve's act? Is he the yang to the yang or something? I don't know. Does it work?
I mean, it's weird because Prince Nana ostensibly is still a manager of the tag team that Jericho and Hook beat tonight.
I know.
And he wasn't out there, right?
He cheats on Collision on Saturdays, but then he's a babyface comedy act with Swerve, the happy-go-lucky guy, lightening the mood. I mean, they got to – there should be some quality control consistency here.
You know, that said, the weird thing is that Swerve started to get over as a babyface when Nana started doing his dance. I mean,
well, right,
it's hugely over, so.
But you, I would argue that getting over because of a dance when you want to be a top guy is not the way to get over. I think the scissor me daddy stuff has limited. The Acclaim make some good merch money, and they got big crowd reactions. But to me, that's gimmicky and ephemeral. It's Fandango-esque. And
yeah, it does work better in WWE, right?
I'm not even saying that. I think it works better in the mid-card. And it's fine in the mid-card. But Swerve, if Swerve is like, oh, I'm over because of Prince Nana's dance, I mean, that's sad.
It helped him get over. I think he's gotten over himself since then. But
right. So enough. But yeah. Let's move on. I think you can have people like Prince Nana, which is, if he's heel manager, that's a problem. But, you know, I think Swerve can cordially say, I'm moving on. Or Nana can turn on him because of some lame reason and go back to the mid-card, managing mid-card teams, and let Swerve be on his own. You know, I mean, there was a reason that, Bobby Heenan bought Hercules from Slick when it was time for Hercules to fight Hulk Hogan. I think I got my history right. Brian from Phoenix will yell at me if I'm wrong on that. It's okay that when you move up on the card to leave some people behind who are mid-carders.
Yeah, I think that the whole Swerve face turn was so weirdly handled that, it, much like MJF's face turn, there wasn't like this moment in the sand where all of a sudden he became a good guy, right? It wasn't clearly telegraphed as often is the case in AEW. The closest we've come to that was at the pay-per-view in the three-way match when Prince Nana wanted Swerve to use the crown to cheat, and Swerve refused to do so.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess I am not into Nana as much as others. I didn't see ROH as it was happening to have a reservoir of goodwill like Tony Khan did on Nana, so I'm sort of indifferent to him.
Yeah. And finally, Tony seems to be loading the card again for next week in Toronto. That'd be 3 weeks in a row. He wasn't kidding when he said he planned on Revolution being another tentpole in AEW history. So that goes to what I was saying, too. I like the idea of just load every show. Like, just get your work – have your top wrestlers be workhorses. And it doesn't mean they have to kill themselves out there with a needless density of high spots and not selling and taking crazy chances they don't have to take. I mean, be artists, not hacks. But, my God, get them out there and do finishes and have matches where people don't know the outcome and make this show about top stars having pay-per-view matchups at, you know, 80% of what you would do in a pay-per-view regularly. Wrestlers had way harder schedules up until recently in terms of how many matches they worked, and they had the house show, and then they shifted up for TV and shifted up higher for pay-per-view. You can do a version of that in AEW. Let's get your people in the ring. MJF had a Cush deal, but hopefully everybody else doesn't have super limited dates.
I mean, I feel like I can usually predict who's going to win on the WWE matches. However, what WWE does well is, like when a Drew McIntyre is being built up or a Becky Lynch is being built up for a title match, they will put them over people who are, you know, fairly high up on the card, right? Yeah. Liv Morgan, probably Nia Jax now for Becky Lynch. And I mean, I think didn't Drew get a countout win or DQ win over Cody recently?
And they talked about that
right.
Cody goes in a loss to Roman Reigns.
Yeah, sets him up for a title match if he doesn't win, you know, if Drew doesn't beat Seth and Cody's looking for a title challenger after they get through the bloodline angle. So WWE does a lot of the same thing, but they are not less afraid to put top people or close to the top people against the top stars to build them up to build matches and build future programs. And AEW didn't always used to be afraid, but for calendar 24 at least, and probably a little bit in 2023, it got really bad, right?
Outside of
the Continental Classic, where there were less predictable matches in some cases. Tony Khan really got away from that. So I'm all for, you know, it's a challenge when you're doing clean finishes, right, or decisive wins, and you know, there's consequences to that, but you need to have the confidence that you can build people back up when needed.
All right, I'll close with JB's comments on Monet, even though we've had a lot of comments on it because he's got an interesting take. He's first wants to know if Kyle from Baltimore is going to be calling to celebrate his favorite wrestler. making her debut in AEW. We did not hear from Kyle. I hope he's okay. Also, I thought now the dog and the cat. Now the dog and the cat are fighting. You can tell I'm going past the normal time here. I thought that the CEO branding was a smart way to introduce Monet to AEW. It takes elements of her former boss character from WWE and combines it with the corporate level talk that we've come to know in AEW with the EVPs. And as we know from WWE, it's usually not a bad thing to give fans something to chant. I also really enjoyed Monet's promo. It definitely felt like a Cody promo in that you could tell. You could feel her true, genuine passion for wrestling without feeling too corny. She walked the line very well. I also enjoyed how she alluded to her history with Willow, setting that matchup for the future, similar to what Punk did in his first AEW promo. Is Mercedes tapping into a little bit the Cody thing? Very particular about her presentation, ring entrance, the clothes are top shelf, very biographical. She's got a history. She talks about herself a lot, but does so in a way that is, you can live vicariously through me, and I'm going to give you a journey and that you can be proud of, and I'm aspiring for things, and your support is going to help me achieve them. I mean, there's some similarities there. I think there's some boxes that check that are similar. What do you think?
We only have one night of evidence to go on, so I think it's premature to say. It's never a bad thing to care about how you're presented within, you know, certain parameters, right? It's good to put thought into that.
Yes. Eric, do you want to close with your anything else other than the bone to pick with me?
Yeah, I have the bone. We've said it all. But what we haven't said is I have now noticed that in the post-revolution pay-per-view roundtable with Todd and Rich Fan, I believe it was Rich Fan, you complained that Will Ospreay did too many moves in his match with Takeshita. Tonight, you complained that Will Ospreay was too enthusiastic. Well, explain what you have against Will Ospreay for the listeners.
I got nothing against him. I think he's great. But I thought he did. There was too high a density of moves in that pay-per-view match. I didn't think it took away from the match. I think it just didn't. You reached a certain point. It's like all you can eat pizza after like 8 slices, 9 slices, if you're really hungry, then that 10th, 11th, and 12th have diminishing returns. And I think there were diminishing returns trying to pack that much in. And I am an advocate for lengthy careers, selling. I think it numbs. I guess the negative isn't to the match excitement, but to the other matches when wrestlers are trying to tell stories differently. And I thought I made my case in the roundtable, so I'm just repeating myself here a bit. So as far as the energy, I just don't think it's sustainable. I think he's very excited this week, but come on, you agree? This would be a little hard to sustain. It's not even a critique. I just think it would be difficult to sustain that level of intensity and enthusiasm.
If you're just naturally performing, it would be hard to sustain. You know, there are substances that can help you with such a thing. If you're into that thing,
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not. But I guess what I'm hearing from you is you much prefer Randy Orton grabbing a headlock and having a control period on the mat. Is that what I'm hearing?
The charming false choice that you present often between one critique and then flipping to the other. Actually, Randy would be someone that Will Ospreay could learn some things from. Randy could learn some things from Will Ospreay, but physically could not do them ever, much less now. So AEW should be happy that they have Will. But I will stand by the argument that shoving tons of dots into your mouth at the movie theater isn't advisable. You should savor one or two at a time. And I felt like that was just a lot quickly. And I know that's a style.
I'm not dissing you. I'm just pointing it out. Some people are into the modern style and some people, are into other styles. Everyone has their legitimate points to be debated and argued over.
Well, right. And I've made my points, but I don't think it's fair to say it's the modern style. I think WWE style is a modern style also, which is selling out a lot more buildings than New Japan and AEW, and drawing much bigger ratings and getting much bigger TV deals. And that's a modern style too. It's very much augmented and curated and refined compared to what they were doing 10 and 15 and 20 years ago too. There's an evolution, but it is a very deliberate style that every match has an eye on how it'll affect other matches on the card. And it's not all about trying to get 5 stars. And that is a modern, as modern of an approach as density of high spots and no selling one big spot after another. That's all I got, Eric.
Yep, me too.
All right,
we've covered it all. We had references to Antonin Dvorak, classical music, Todd Martin, ABBA, burying the town of Waterloo, Wade's Hall of Fame, bona fides established, and a caller who didn't like Mercedes. So
who didn't see her.
So I got to say, we've covered it all.
We had a dog and a cat fight in the background too. So we've gone everywhere. All right, Eric, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, callers, listeners, on-site correspondent, emailers, and all our listeners. We will talk to you next time.